using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
It's Thursday, the 2nd of September, year of our Lord, 2021, day 537 of America Held Hostage. We have some very important updates today, some big wins, as a matter of fact. Today, there's a lot of good news in this ongoing war, so stay tuned. Today we're going to take a look at a resolution in Los Angeles with the large church that was there and with many other churches. It's time to pay the piper, and we're going to have a day of resolution for these people, and I think that's going to come before final judgment as well. We're also going to take a look at the abortion situations and what is happening in Afghanistan, even more betrayal coming out of there. So we'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm going to begin with what happened with the Texas abortion law, because folks, you may not understand it, but I sincerely believe that it was what is happening to us in this country has a lot to do with the moral state of this country. And that doesn't mean that we have to get everything right. You know, there's grace with God, but when we throw God out, one of the things that follows from that is self-centeredness that causes us to do things like murder children because we think our lives will be better off for that. We have the Supreme Court is now going to allow this Texas 6-week abortion ban to take effect. And this has really, really upset many people, especially Hillary Clinton. I mean, if you see the picture of Hillary Clinton, boy, they found a picture for her on Breitbart. Of course, they had a lot to choose from, pictures where she looks deranged and angry. And here's what she had to say on social media. She said, "Under cover of darkness." Well, no, actually, what you're doing in abortion clinics is dark, but we brought it to light. Under the cover of darkness, by choosing to do nothing, the Supreme Court allowed an unconstitutional abortion ban in Texas to go into effect last night. Clinton said, Clinton raged would be the better way to put it. Their decision doesn't change the fact that reproductive rights are human rights, and we will fight for them. Well, what is she going to do about it?
Oh, rubbish. You have no power here. Be gone before somebody drops a house on you too.
Very well. I'll bide my time.
Oh, she'll bide her time.
As for you, my fine lady, it's true, I can't attend you here and now as I'd like, but just try to stay out of my way. Just try. I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
Yeah, you know, what's confusing about this whole analogy here, this metaphor, is that it was the Wicked Witch of the East in that story that the house dropped on. That's the Wicked Witch of the West. So the metaphor doesn't exactly fit. Hillary Clinton, the Wicked Witch of the East. Texas Heartbeat Act is now in effect, said Texas Right to Life. Texas is officially the first state ever to enforce a heartbeat law. They went on to say, in the last-minute effort to block the law, abortion providers applied to the U.S. Supreme Court for an injunction, but the court has not yet ruled on the matter, though they could do so at any time. And the law, as passed by the legislature, as signed into law by the governor, is now in effect. The abortion provider's appeal comes after their hopes to block the law were thwarted over the weekend when the Fifth Circuit canceled a hearing that was initially planned for Monday. Other states have passed heartbeat bills, but once signed into law, abortion rights activists have filed lawsuits to challenge them. And subsequently, courts have blocked these laws, ruling that they are unconstitutional in light of the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision. And see, that's just the point. This is a temporary victory. The real fight, the real basis of all of this, is the idea of judicial supremacy. And as I've said before, and as Amy Coney Barrett has intimated in her hearings, they're probably not going to touch Roe v. Wade. Why? Because they will do things around the edge, and this is an important thing, if this is allowed to stand by our judicial masters, by the nine in black robes, the Nazgul, as I sometimes refer to them. They have, with Marbury versus Madison, and Jefferson warned us about it at the time. He said it'll completely destroy the Constitution and our way of government, and it has. He's been proven right. But they assumed, usurped the power to review any law and strike it down as being constitutional or unconstitutional. But if you look at what they say about Roe v. Wade, they love to say that it is the law of the land. So they went from a situation where they could nullify laws by saying that they were not constitutional, where they could actually legislate and say, as we've now seen in the wake of this, say what redefine marriage, redefine a lot of different things. We don't want the court to have that kind of power. That's why they were never given that kind of power in the Constitution. And so, you know, when we look at this and they say, well, this is a well-established constitutional right, well, I just don't understand how it took over 200 years for people to discover that right. How did it go on for that long? Because the people who wrote it never intended for that to be the case. You have one person saying this extreme law. This actually one person. This is Biden's comment, not one person, but this is Biden, who says this extreme Texas law blatantly violates the constitutional right established under Roe v. Wade. Do you notice that these people who are so contemptuous of our free speech, of our bodily integrity, of every other right that we have, the right to educate our children, because it's these leftists who want to force everybody to go to their government schools for obvious reasons. But these people who don't think you have any parental rights, you don't have any individual rights, you don't have informed consent, the only right, as I've said for the longest time, and boy, we've now seen this proven in spades this last year, the only right they support is the right to kill your kid. And that is being emphasized. As a matter of fact, I saw one tweet where a person was just railing against people who are against mask mandates and against vaccine mandates and says, all these people who say, my body, my choice, and they're taking away our choices about our bodies with all this. And that is exactly the opposite. You know, a child is not your body. Your body produced that child, but you have no more right to kill that child when it is still in your body than you do after the child leaves your body. Because that child, half the time, is not your body. It's a different sex half the time. And many times, is a different blood type. And you know what? It is always a different DNA. A different DNA. It is a unique individual. It is not your body. The Texas measure contains a unique enforcement mechanism. And this is the interesting thing about this. Any private citizen may file a civil lawsuit against an abortion provider, or any individual who aids or abets a criminal abortion. The law's civil enforcement mechanism limits actions taken to violations of the heartbeat ban. In other words, abortions that are sought after a fetal heartbeat is detected. And I wish that conservative organizations would not use the term fetal. Just say a baby, right? I mean, they use these prevarications. Fetus is just Latin for baby. Let's just say baby. After a baby's heartbeat is detected, you can't kill the baby. Texas Right to Life has organized an effort to help private citizens enforce a new law. Any abortion performed in violation of the Texas Heartbeat Act, they said, is a criminal offense, and any individual or entity that aids or abets and that abortion with a detectable heartbeat in Texas is violating the law as well. So according to the website, they define aiding or abetting as any of these activities. And, of course, it could be others. But abortion funds, if they give money to provide financial or logistical support to women who kill their unborn children after a heartbeat is detected, or if doctors or medical personnel provide abortion referrals after a heartbeat, and any other individual or entity that aids or abets an illegal abortion in any way. You have a spokesperson for Planned Parenthood saying, as our providers are grappling with the logistical challenges of calling all of their patients and telling them what they'll be able to provide and helping them find places to access abortions out of state and to secure funds for travel, they're also getting a lot of incoming calls. It looks like people are sitting in our parking lot taking down license plate numbers and taking pictures. Well, you know, these people who have been hired killers at Planned Parenthood, and it looks like they're not getting the message yet. I just read you what aiding and abetting is, and then they go through the whole list that I just read you of aiding and abetting. We're going to give them money. We're going to give them referrals. We're going to help to transport them out. That's called aiding and abetting. And for each one of those cases, as these people are there in the parking lot writing down the license plate numbers and taking pictures, this is what could happen to them in terms of a fine. All of these individuals must pay damages to the person who sued them of at least $10,000 for each of these illegal abortions that they perform or aid and abet. So each of these people that they're talking to, each of them that they're assisting, just multiply that by $10,000. You got to make this at least equivalent to what they get. And of course, they may still determine that it would be worth it for them to kill a baby and sell the body parts to Fauci and the FDA, because Fauci and the FDA are paying way more than $10,000. So they could make money for the abortion, and then they could sell the particular body parts that they harvest. Each of those body parts they could sell for $15,000 to $20,000. So it's not a stiff enough penalty, quite frankly. And quite frankly, what needs to be done is you need to have states assert the Ninth and Tenth Amendment over and above the usurped power of the Supreme Court and send these people and the people who are committing these abortions, these hired killers, you need to send these so-called doctors to jail. Abby Johnson, here in Texas, who's been a big part of this, I've interviewed her. She was a former abortion clinic manager, and then she became a Christian. And then she became an opponent. She says more than 85% of abortions will be abolished in Texas. If these people who win the lawsuits, who file the lawsuits win, they'll be entitled to attorney's fees and $10,000. And if they lose, they're out nothing but whatever it costs to bring the suits, because the defendants cannot recoup their attorney's fees if they lose. So the New York Times is outraged about this. They said it deputizes abortion opponents to harass their enemies. No, it deputizes abortion opponents to harass murderers. Murderers. Planned Parenthood and these abortionists. New York Times also tweeted out, said the Supreme Court has made Roe momentarily useless without sparking the national convulsion that would have come from overturning it outright. And that's why I said, I think that that's the way the Supreme Court is going to play it. They do not want to overturn Roe v. Wade any more than they want to overturn Marbury versus Madison. And so I think what they're going to do is they're going to allow certain things like this to avoid taking away some of their power, because that's the thing that is most important to them. So as I said, Biden is condemning this case, talking about a woman's constitutional right that he pretends was given by the Supreme Court. By the way, there isn't any law that gives us rights. The Constitution does not give us rights. The Declaration of Independence does not give us rights. It just recognizes what we have as creatures of God that we all possess. That doesn't mean, that doesn't matter what our skin color is. It doesn't matter how old we are, what size we are. It doesn't matter if it's at the beginning of life or at the end of life. We have the right to life and to liberty and to the pursuit of happiness. But you know, Biden is out there condemning what he calls an extreme abortion ban while he still has the blood of the people at Kabul on his hands. And while he has Americans left behind in Afghanistan, he is abandoning these children to their fate. Yeah, terminate. Yeah, it says, he vows to fight for women's constitutional right to termination. To termination. They're terminating children. I can't believe the way they use and misuse language. So I kind of think that this is a divide the baby type of decision. Remember Solomon? He had the two mothers who come to him, and one of them's baby died during the night. She switched out her dead baby with another one. And the two mothers come before Solomon and say, she stole my baby. No, that's my baby. You stole the baby, that type of thing. And he wisely says, just cut the baby in half and give one half to each of them. And then the real mother said no. The real mother said no. Are we going to have any real mothers in this? Are we going to allow the Supreme Court to cut the babies in half with this presumed dictate called Roe v. Wade? Their opinion? They have an opinion. As Andrew Jackson said, the Supreme Court's issued its opinion. Let's see them enforce it. We need to enforce the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. We need to have people who will do that. I don't see anybody doing that. I don't even see anybody calling to do that. I mean, I was disappointed even with Judge Roy Moore when I talked to him that he kind of backed back from the Supreme Court. Now, this is a guy who challenged a lot of stuff, and they threw him out twice from the state Supreme Court because he was challenging dictates. So I really don't see anyone that has the backbone to do this. So we'll take what we can get with this. 6-week bans enacted by at least a dozen states have been blocked by all the courts until now, but the citizen enforcement scheme made the Texas law more difficult to challenge in court. And the Supreme Court's decision to side for now against the clinics is likely to encourage copycat bills in other states, writes Politico, and they were so upset about that. I mean, we could allow some babies to survive. We look at the fact that as we are doing this, populations in the West are just collapsing. Between the abortions, between the chemicals and the depopulation things that they've put into, they've hit it in multiple ways. The propaganda, the feminism, where you know, mothers don't want to be mothers. Potential mothers don't want to have children. So there's a sociological thing here where they value their career, their money, more than they do their children, or the idea that they would have children. So that's a big part of it, and that feeds into this abortion thing. And the other part of it is the outright attacks on our bodies that can be measurable. You can measure it in sperm count. Talk about spermicide. Spermageddon, chemical and biological attacks on us all the time. And I think that's a very, very important part about this vaccine rollout. It has a depopulation component to it. Yes, it is about population control, making sure that you cannot do this and cannot do that unless you say, government may I. It's like a Simon Says game with Fauci in charge, this medical dictatorship. But the other part of the population control is depopulation. And what I think is really a related matter, you have states demanding the blood of newborns, and one judge issues a ruling, siding with the parents, saying that's a violation. A years-long fight over whether the government is allowed to demand from newborns and their parents access to the infant's DNA has reached a conclusion in Michigan, where a federal judge has decided that such programs are unconstitutional. Well, they are clearly a violation of our privacy. And even though this has had a good resolution both in Michigan and in Texas, this has happened before in Texas, we have to ask the question, why are they motivated to do this? Well, they say it's for scientific research. Well, Fauci and the FDA are harvesting baby organs that they want fresh, not frozen, that they are telling Planned Parenthood how to get them, and they're working on these abortions. And more than half of these cases where these babies at the later term that the FDA and Fauci, the NIH and the FDA are looking for these baby organs, at that later date and the way that they're aborting the babies, half of the babies are born alive. And so they're taking the organs out alive because, you know, if you want organs that are fresh, not frozen, that would be the way that you'd prefer to do it, wouldn't it? So what is going on with the blood? In Minnesota, a successful fight was brought against the state government by the Citizens Council for Health Freedom over the acquisition and ownership of the DNA of newborns. The president of the organization noted that her discovery of the secret DNA data confiscation and the use of baby DNA also led to a successful lawsuit in Texas. In the Michigan case, however, she explained that it is the first and the biggest federal win for the unconsented storage of newborn babies' DNA. This is what our government is doing. The issue is that hospitals routinely take blood samples from newborns to screen them for a variety of health conditions, but the fights have been over what happens later. In Minnesota, the state was keeping and allowing research on and permitting other commercial activities with those DNA samples, which legally belong to the individuals. In Michigan, the Department of Health and Human Services has collected blood samples since the 1960s. So here we are. 60 years they've been doing this kind of stuff. What are they doing with it? What is their real motivation? When you look at these, you want to talk about darkness? I mean, you look at the kind of experiments that the bioweapon divisions that were started after World War II with people we brought in from Nazi Germany and Japanese scientists who had been experimenting on American soldiers. You look at that darkness, and you look at the kinds of research that they're doing. And then you look at the fact that they're secretly collecting blood DNA, DNA from blood for 60 years. In Michigan, the Department of Health and Human Services has done it since the 1960s. Since the 1980s, those millions of samples have been kept, and the state has allowed a variety of research and other projects using that data. Now that is going to require parental consent for any governmental use of newborn dried blood spots which contain DNA. The Sixth Court ordered, quote, the parents, listen to this, the parents have a fundamental right to direct the medical care of their children, and their claims may go forward so that the parties can present evidence related to defendants' actions and so forth. But that first part there, the parents have a fundamental right to direct the medical care of their children. Can we apply that to injections? Because we now have moves being made across this country and across many other countries already to inject children without the consent of their parents. And if you look at what is happening in the schools, they're presuming that since you drop your kid off at the school, they can do anything they wish in terms of any kind of sexual perversion, in terms of any kind of Marxist indoctrination. And they do exactly that. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about what is going on in Afghanistan. Mandated Trump shots. We're going to have an update as to what's going on in Australia with a trucker. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future.
They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, important update as to what is happening in Afghanistan. This is coming from MRC, MRC TV. They have a division that scans Spanish news. MRC Latino Reader. They say now that Hispanic and Latino Americans make up the largest minority group in the country, they've become a priority for leftist indoctrination by the U.S. Spanish language media. So as a champion of honest journalism in both English and Spanish, MRC Latino exposes and counters leftist propaganda. That's their purpose. And so as a result, there was an interview, and this is why you haven't seen it anywhere else except at MRC TV, where they are looking at what is happening in the Spanish media. This is a Univision interview. And it was an interview with a former Army Green Beret and Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, Roger Pardo Maurer. And he was giving the interview in Spanish. And it is absolutely bombshell what he had to say. And it kind of reinforces the suspicions of my friend I was talking to on Sunday, who was a Marine, and he got out about a decade ago. But he said it was always, 10 years ago when he was doing this, he said it was always a priority to train people to spot suicide bombers and to shoot them on sight. Now, you can say it was a crowd, you can say it was chaos, but that is also part of the training. And even more importantly, as he was saying, they knew for a day or two in advance that this was coming. And they knew where it was coming, precisely. Abbey Gate was specifically mentioned. So they knew when and they knew where it was coming. They had been trained to stop this. And so he said, what were the rules of engagement? Did they train the rules of engagement saying that you can't engage these people? Because it certainly looks suspicious. It looks like they were kowtowing to the Taliban in every way possible. Don't do anything to offend the Taliban, including defending your own lives, not just the lives of innocent people. I mean, it's 13 Americans who died, but there were people, foreign nationals of many different countries, a lot of Afghans as well. I mean, I think it was just under 300 was the total number of people who died. I'm not sure about that total, but here's the story. Univision from MRC. Univision aired a bombshell allegation in the midst of its coverage of the U.S. disastrous Afghanistan withdrawal. Former Army Green Beret, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, Roger Pardo Maurer, the Department of Defense, he said, had knowledge of the homicide bomber at the airport, and they scrambled a Predator drone, only to be ordered to have it stand down and lock, even after it was locked on its target. So they knew about this. They'd been looking for it for days. They had warned people. We'd seen the warnings. We knew that they knew this was coming because we'd seen the warnings for 24, 48 hours. And so people who were looking for this They were on the lookout. They said that they had identified the suicide bomber. And they had him locked on target. And then Pardo Maurer says the stand-down order was given in deference to negotiations with the Taliban. Now you have the Biden administration trying to tell us that the Taliban are the good guys, and this is ISIS-K, and ISIS-K is against the Taliban, but the Taliban negotiations said to stand down. Here's what he had to say in the interview. He said, what is being said by people who are involved is that the Defense Department already knew who the bomber was and when the Kabul attack would happen, and that a Predator drone had a lock on him. And I think that is entirely believable because of the precision that they knew about this. They knew when and where it was going to happen. Do you think maybe they also knew who it was going to be? And if they knew who it's going to be, the technology that they have allows them, with their biometric identification and their face scanning and even being able to identify people by the way that they walk, I find it completely believable that given all the information that they had in advance, that they would know exactly where this guy was, that they'd be able to scope him out. So they refused to grant permission to fire on that bomber. Permission was requested and was denied. Why? He said. Because we're in the process of negotiating with the Taliban, who aren't even in control of their own government or their own people. Again, this is Roger Pardo Maurer, the former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense. So he said two questions, MRC says two questions emerge. For how long in advance did we have eyes on the Kabul bomber prior to the arrival at the airport? And who issued the stand-down order? Exactly. But I think that that is exactly what is happening, which is why this is so outrageous, even more so. It's not just the incompetence of the military and the Biden administration to shut down and sneak out at the dead of night a massive base there at Bagram, only 30 miles from Kabul, something that's the size of a city, that has multiple airfields, that it already has a great deal of defense. They just shut that down and ran away at the, in the dead of night, not even notifying the Afghans. And, of course, that precipitated the collapse, accelerated it. But then when they know that this is coming and they have a lock on the guy, they don't do anything about it. And they probably were under orders, the Marines, not to do anything about it on the ground either. Nancy Pelosi has blocked the House from reading the names of the 13 killed U.S. service members. We gaveled in, we had a prayer, we said the Pledge of Allegiance, we took a moment of silence of pretty much all Republican veterans, and then we asked to be recognized to read names and to bring up Afghanistan legislation. This is Brian Mast, a Republican from Florida. He said, we then asked to be recognized and read these names. He said they did not acknowledge us, and they just closed the House down. Carlos Jimenez of Florida, congressman, said, how badly do Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats want to cover up this Afghanistan debacle? They just blocked members of Congress from reading the names of the service members who sacrificed their lives in Afghanistan last week. Don't you think our military deserves better? Greg Stuba, Republican of Florida, said House Democrats just refused to recognize Republican veterans on the House floor to read the names of our fallen service members in Afghanistan. That's how far our nation has fallen. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader, attempted a House vote to require Biden to recover the military gear and Americans. Democrats blocked the vote. McCarthy said, Democrats just blocked a vote to require a plan from Biden to bring Americans home and to account for all the military equipment he left behind. He said Republicans will not stop until every American is home safely. Well, I'm glad that unlike Trump, McCarthy at least paid lip service to getting Americans out. Trump didn't even talk about Americans left behind. He was just talking about the equipment. Tell them they got to get the equipment back or we're going to go back in. And if we don't go back in, we're just going to bomb it all to oblivion. What about the Americans? What about America first? President Trump. Yeah, you know, he never said Americans first, did he? It was always America first. So what does that mean? We talk about America first. What does it mean to Donald Trump to talk about America first? Does that mean the national security state? Does that mean the CIA first? Does that mean the military-industrial complex first? Does it mean putting the interests of Americans first? Does it mean putting the interests of American multinational corporations first? Maybe it's the interest of American multinational pharmaceutical companies first, because that's exactly what he did do. And texts that have surfaced between an army colonel there in Afghanistan and a retired veteran who was there working to get people out, Michael Yon, he said the Army colonel, who was assigned to the 82nd Airborne Division, going back and forth in communications with Michael Yon, and he was giving this to John Solomon in an interview. And Yon said the group of Americans were abandoned at the Kabul airport, pleading for help, as military officials told him that they were finished with evacuations. He said, we had them out there waving their passports, screaming, I'm American. He said this while appearing with John Solomon. People were turned away from the gate by our own army, said Yon. He is a former Special Forces soldier and war correspondent, and he gave some redacted clips of the screenshots on his phone, the text messages back and forth that he had with his army colonel on the ground. The army colonel says, everyone is having a hard time getting in the gate. American citizens can't get past the Taliban checkpoints. I'm only aware of a handful of families that are still trying to get in right now. Are you trying to get people in? Writing this to Yon, who is there, again, the former Special Forces guy, who was, and the only people who seem to be working effectively in terms of getting these people there, because the military, not only were they under orders not to kill the suicide bomber when the Predator drone people had him locked in, but they were also told they couldn't go out and bring in friendlies to take them out, American citizens and Afghan allies. And so that was left to volunteers to do that. And so that's why there's this communication going back and forth between the military that's there under restrictions from Biden administration and the people who are actually out there, these former retired people who shut down their private life to go back and try to rescue people. And so he says, I'm only aware of a handful of families out there trying to get, are you trying to get any people in? He says, any American citizens, asks Yon. And the Army colonel says, yes, all of them. And then he says, we are effing abandoning American citizens. I'm so pissed. Most of our list are high-value Afghans. And so they abandoned American citizens. And so in this text message, Yon writes back and says, hold on, hold on. Don't leave your screen. How many American citizens do you have total? I'm on with the right guy right now. Finally, please be quick. And then he replies and says, those will take an act of God. So Yon's account he shared with John Solomon. The stranded Americans, he said, eventually scattered to safe houses to avoid capture by the Taliban, after which Yon wrote a stinging email to an army major whose team abandoned the rescue effort. He said, you guys left American citizens at the gate of the Kabul airport. Three empty jets paid for by volunteers are waiting for them. You and I talked on the phone. I told you where they were. I gave you their passport images and my email and my phone number, and you left them behind? Great job saving yourself. You'll probably get a lot of medals. Oh, I think that guy will probably get promoted in the position of Millie, because I wouldn't be surprised if Millie was exactly that type of person. When you have the brass and the Biden administration, all these people, telling them that they cannot kill that suicide bomber when they got a lock on him with a Predator drone? Good job of saving yourself politically. I mean, they're not even trying to save their lives. This is just their career. These bunch of bureaucrats with uniforms. While the helper group worked frantically to get the Americans through the gate, members texted one another to say that they had seen National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan on CNN, saying that neither he nor the U.S. Central Command Chief, General Kenneth McKenzie, were told that Americans were abandoned. How did they end up just taking off, said one correspondent, texting the group? Because the National Security Advisor just told Tapper that neither he nor McKenzie had heard anything about Americans being left at the gate. The correspondent noted that the private group heard differently from a lieutenant colonel. He said, given the fact that we've had comms with an O5 on the ground, that means that CENTCOM C3 is crap, or else someone is lying. I think it's the second alternative, actually. 24 students, a 3-year-old California boy among the Americans stranded in Afghanistan. As Zero Hedge says, if the Biden administration's estimate of close to 100 people stranded in Afghanistan is even remotely accurate, and I would suspect that it is not. I think it's a total lie. But let's just go with his lower number. We only left 100 people behind. Well, good for you. You should be proud of that, right? Well, if that's true, 25% of them are students, says Zero Hedge. And they said they've made numerous calls to the White House, to the Secretary of Defense's office, to the Secretary of State's office, escalating the family's case all the way up to the top for us, said Brown, who also contacted Representative Jackie Speier and her staff. So they write the White House, nothing. They write the Secretary of Defense's office, nothing. They contact a Democrat congresswoman. They said she wrote a letter, to whom it may concern. I believe it's of particular and urgent concern that these individuals be allowed to pass through the gate and be given safe refuge at the Karzai International Airport so that they may be available for departure. Armed with that letter, one boy and his father and several other family members approached the airport, but the Taliban attacked them. They just were stopped by the Taliban checkpoint, and they received physical beatings at the gate. They were pushed back. They had to flee and return to a safe house. Yeah, because they're saying, Jackie Speier? Who's that? I don't know who that is. The people on the ground, people in uniforms, the people that they're talking to in the Biden administration said, you can do whatever you want to these Americans. So a letter from a congresswoman they've never heard of doesn't matter at all to them. Jonathan Lehman said an email this morning from a friend in the Middle East regarding pastors and Christians in Afghanistan, posted with permission. He said, I just want to update you. Our guys did not get out. They're in real danger. I'm devastated. They're in a hellish nightmare right now. I prayed with them last night. I wept as I thanked them for their lives and their faith. Working on options to get them out now, but ultimately my hope and their hope is in the Lord. We're desperate right now. And we've communicated directly, and they've communicated directly with me that the Taliban are looking for them. It's hard to believe that any of this is real. Well, yes, except that I've seen too many lies and betrayals from our government to think that anything is beneath them. And, of course, it's high-value Afghans that are important to them. Not Americans, and certainly not Christians who are being persecuted. You know, we hear all the time, well, we got to let these people in because they're refugees. You know, they're refugees out of Central and South America. That is nothing like this. But our government turns a deaf ear and a blind eye to any Christians who are being persecuted and hunted down in the country that they were controlling, because that was happening while they were controlling the country. Why would we expect that they would do anything different now? While the U.S. government was essentially in control of that puppet Afghan government, Afghanistan was the second worst persecutor of Christians in the world. In the world. And it's not just the Americans and high-value Afghans and Christians who are left behind. Listen to this. Hundreds of journalists who were employed by the U.S. government. So these are not necessarily really journalists. These are propagandists. These are literally the Operation Mockingbird people. So I guess we could look at this and say that if they've got a plan to just bug out and leave these people behind, I guess we could call it Operation To Kill a Mockingbird. This is the U.S. Agency for Global Media, a propaganda organization like Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, all of those. It's their employees that are being left behind. These are the people who worked for the government. The propagandists doing their dirty work. Are you listening, CNN, Washington Post, New York Times? You think they're going to treat you any differently in this country? Left behind more than 100 government-sponsored journalists, plus their families, after putting them through 3 weeks of hell, wrote Washington Post columnist Josh Rogan. His claim is based on information from people on the ground, from a U.S. senator who tried to help, as well as from the president of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, whose employees are among the stranded. So it's officially independent, but the USAGM, the U.S. Agency for Global Media, is really a government agency. It's a government propaganda agency. And they just left these people behind. According to Rogan, with the Washington Post, he said 600 or so employees and contractors who work for these organizations, as well as their family members, repeatedly tried to escape from Kabul after the Taliban takeover, but could not. So I just ask you, do you believe that number about 100 American citizens left behind? I mean, if they've got, they could have some Afghans who are working for them that they don't care about. So all these 600 people may not be American citizens. But do you think that if they got 600 people who are working for the U.S. Agency for Global Media, there are American employees of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty that are there, and others, do you think it'd be reasonable to think that there would be more than 100 of them if there's 600 total? They said it's disheartening that so many journalists employed by an American-funded news organizations have now been left behind with their families, said Senator Ben Cardin, a Democrat from Maryland. Well, they're just expendable minions, right? Hillary would have said, yeah, you're nothing but deplorables. And then Trump said, you're nothing but non-essentials. And these people are just forgotten and left behind. The president of Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, Jamie Fly, said, told Rogan at the Washington Post that the U.S. government, quote, consistently failed to help the journalists who made several trips to the airport and spent, quote, days and nights waiting just outside the gates but never managed to get in, unquote. At one point, Fly said he was on the phone with senior military officials to try to get a group in, but no one passed the message on to the soldiers at the gate. Acting USA Global Media head Kailu Chow wrote to President Biden on August the 23rd, informing him that the journalists were still unable to get to the airport. 2 days later, 67 members of Congress also wrote to the president, urging him to help the USA Global Media staff. Think about that. 67 members. That's 15% of the House of Representatives. 15% of them wrote to the president. It's not like they didn't know this was happening. Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty had bought seats on a Czech charter flight 2 weeks ago, but their employees were turned around at the airport gates. Three other charter planes that were supposed to take them to Spain last week never made it to Kabul because of the August 26th suicide bombing. They said the State Department's own local staff barely made the cut. You see that? They came close to leaving the State Department's own people behind. Don't tell me this is 100 Americans left behind. This is an amazing betrayal. An amazing betrayal. The last five U.S. flights departed Kabul at 11:59 local time on Monday with no American civilians on board. Think about that. Do you think that's significant? The fact they left at 11:59? Make sure we get out of here before high noon. You know, the Taliban, that gang has given us a deadline of high noon. We better hightail it out of here. Get all the planes out. If we got to leave somebody behind, I mean, even if they're with the American embassy itself, just leave them behind. We got to be out of here by noon. 11:59, no later. How cowardly how servile they have become. As Babylon Bee points out, Jen Psaki, press secretary for Biden, said a record 331 million Americans have not been abandoned in Afghanistan. See, that's the good news. It's kind of like what Trump did. We had that phony simulation from the Imperial College of London, not based on a curve even, based on a, you know, forever, every person that get it would infect another 2.5 people. That was the basis of that simulation. And then when they wrote it up, they couldn't get the same answer twice. They were called on that by the University of Edinburgh. But it was Fauci who took that because that was the information that he wanted. He brought that information to President Trump and said 2.2 million people are going to die. So Trump used that as his basis to lock the country down. Now, was he deceived? Just before the election, he was running around bragging that he had saved 2 million lives. Yeah, Fauci told me there's going to be 2.2 million people died, but, you know, because of the wonderful things that I did, locking the country down, I saved 2 million lives. So it's not much of a satire, satirical extension to say that Jen Psaki would say a record 331 million Americans have not been abandoned in Afghanistan. According to sources, an unprecedented 331 million Americans are living safely in America and are not abandoned in Afghanistan, she said. This number is 92,000 higher than last week's number, as that many babies were born in America this week. And that's not even counting all the unknown, undocumented Afghans who are brought in without any ID at all as we leave Americans and people who worked for the American government behind. American citizens, even American citizens who worked for the American government left behind. While the administration did acknowledge that about 250 Americans were stranded in Afghanistan, they're pretty sure that most of them are Republicans anyway. I doubt it. It is believed that tens of thousands of green card holders and Afghan allies are also trapped, but the administration anticipates that they will get lost pretty quickly in the news cycle because you don't see people talking about these faceless individuals. He wanted to get out of there because he didn't want to have any more soldiers killed. But they wouldn't have had the soldiers killed if they would have allowed them to defend themselves, if they hadn't pulled back the Predator drone that had a lock on the guy that they knew was going to do the bombing. They knew when and where, and they probably knew exactly who he was. And they had him pull back because they did not want to offend the Taliban. They got to get out at 11:59 because they do not want to offend the Taliban. Which then brings us to an interview on Good Morning America. George Stephanopoulos was interviewing White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. And in this back and forth, Sullivan said that the U.S. will not rule out giving direct aid to the Taliban regime in Kabul. A somewhat incredulous-looking Stephanopoulos questions, says Zero Hedge, we're going to work with the Taliban? Does that include the prospect of giving them aid? Sullivan, without missing a beat, writes Zero Hedge, responded and said that the group has long widely condemned as a terrorist organization after 9/11. He said, well, first of all, we do believe that there is an important dimension of the humanitarian assistance that should go directly to the people of Afghanistan. And we intend to continue to do that. Sullivan then actually used the unsettling phrase, quote, our economic and development assistance relationship with the Taliban. So this is who taxpayers will now be forced to send aid to. It's not enough that we left behind billions in military equipment, which they can sell on the black market to people. The subtext here is that Plan B, after the U.S. administration has confirmed to have left many Americans behind, with estimates ranging from a couple hundred to several hundred still trapped in the country, Plan B appears to be to literally bribe the Taliban into allowing safe passage for the remaining Americans and local allies in the form of foreign aid or essentially ransom money. And, you know, if some of them go missing and you never see them again, it'll be easy to cover that up. They can't cover it up for those 13 Marines, but they will cover it up for everybody else. Amid sanctions, the Taliban is expected to double down on drug trafficking. This is from the Epic Times. I don't know. I think maybe the CIA can still keep the opium flowing, but the question everybody is saying is that, you know, the Taliban in the past had cracked down on the opium trade. And then when we occupied the country, if you remember, we had Geraldo Rivera run the reports. And it ran on, I think he was working for ABC at the time. He wasn't even with Fox News. And they showed American troops guarding the poppy fields there, where they grow the poppies that they use to make all the various opium products, things like heroin, things like opioids, and so forth. And they were guarding it, and he was absolutely incredulous. What is going on? Why are we guarding these fields that are being used to create heroin and other things like that? Afghanistan is the world's largest producer of the opium poppy, the raw material for heroin. And they don't mention this in the Epic Times, but also opioids. And I don't think it's a coincidence that we had a massive opioid epidemic while we were occupying Afghanistan, and while we were in the name of, we had to give the Afghans an economy. There was nothing else that they could do, really. They needed to grow opium. Well, we know that it is very profitable to grow things like opium that are part of illicit drugs. And we know that because it is so profitable, it was 7.4% of their gross domestic product. But actually, we were giving them even more money than that. It wasn't necessary for them to do that. They've got a lot of different crops that can be grown there. But we were telling them to do that. And when you look at what our government and the CIA, which is heavily involved in creating this phony war from the very beginning, phony war based on the 9/11 narrative of two planes taking down three buildings in just a couple of hours, steel skyscrapers collapsing into their footprint. That phony narrative was the basis for us to go there. And then the CIA, that loves to run drugs, one of the biggest drug traffickers in the world, truth be known, that created the crack cocaine epidemic to help fund their secret wars in Central America, they kept it going. But as the Epic Times reports it, the U.S. military presence failed to curtail opium production. They didn't fail. They failed to even try. They supported it. They supported it. They guarded it. They facilitated it in the name of, you know, economics. It's just practical to do something like that. They go on to say that as the world's largest producer, it supplies about 83% of global opium production between 2015 and 2020. I don't know if those earlier years brought down the overall total, but I know they've been having record crops. Every year I'd report it, you know, record amount of opium being grown while we were there. They were talking about how it was a new record crop and how it was in the 90s. It was always in the 90s. The percentage in terms of 90-some-odd percent in terms of the world's production was there. And they were having bumper record crops on an annual basis. The U.S. was monitoring this and allowing this and guarding it and talking about it. It's much higher than 83%. They're wrong about that, just like they're wrong about the fact that the U.S. military was trying to stop it. The U.S. military presence failed to curtail opium production. Give me a break. Give me a break. Are they a government spokesperson or what? Today, when we entered Kabul, we saw a large number of our youth who were sitting under the bridges or next to the walls, and they were using narcotics, said the Taliban spokesman. This is unfortunate. From now on, Afghanistan will be a narcotics-free country. But it needs international assistance. They have very high quality pomegranates and grapes and melons. They can grow saffron. But the U.S. military thinks it'd be better for them and the CIA to grow opium. Because we've got to have that raw material for our big pharmaceutical companies, like Johnson & Johnson, that's now moved on to the vaccines. So they said the immediate effect of the financial squeeze in place is that cash liquidity in Afghanistan may drop because the Biden administration has frozen nearly $9 billion with a B, dollars in Afghan government reserves that were held in the United States. And let me tell you, this is not something that is being done now. This was done before this accelerated collapse. It was one of the things, as I reported last week, that helped to accelerate the collapse. Before the president grabbed all the cash that he could stuff in his vehicle, more cash than he could stuff into his airplane, had to leave it behind on the tarmac. Before that happened, it was just a couple of days before that happened, that the U.S. cut off their cash flow. Even though they had $9 billion on deposit, the U.S. would not let them have any more cash. And that caused the president to grab everything he could and run away. It caused the guy who was running the Afghan Central Bank to grab everything he could and run away. Everything the U.S. did, from those financial moves to bugging out of Bagram Air Force Base in the dead of night without telling their Afghan allies, everything the Biden administration did was designed, or had the effect at least, of accelerating this chaotic collapse. So yet another publication, Southfront, says, will the Taliban move to ban opium production? Will it backfire on them economically? So that's all that the American press that is friendly to this occupation, friendly to the CIA, friendly to the military-industrial complex, to the pentagram, that's all they care about, is just the dollars and cents. That's what I was talking about yesterday, about this Virginia Republican candidate running for governor against this corrupt Clinton crony, this Clinton minion, Terry McAuliffe. Terry McAuliffe was greenwashing taking money from wealthy Chinese citizens to come in and get green cards. So I tell you what, I've got this phony solar company, and it went bankrupt. They didn't do anything. It was the thing was just set up to get money from Chinese citizens who are very wealthy who wanted to buy a way into the United States. And it's just a way for him to sell that. And so this guy, Terry McAuliffe, who ought to be a very easy target, frankly, the Republicans put up somebody, and all he is doing is talking about tax policies. After we've had lockdowns and mandates of masks and mandates of vaccines and the rest of this stuff of the last year, he's focused on tax policies. These people are not focused on what's going on with the opium. They're not focused on what's going on with the opioid epidemic in this country. They're focused on, well, what about the economy of Afghanistan? How much money can we make? You know, we don't want to do pomegranates. We don't want to do saffron. Let's go for opium. Raw opium prices have now tripled from about $70 to $200 per kilogram. Maybe that's why Johnson & Johnson moved over into the vaccines. No, I think it's because they could do that without any liability whatsoever. And we'll talk about their legal issues here. In 2017, annual opium production was 7.5% of Afghanistan's gross domestic product. Before 2001, when the U.S. invaded, Taliban had banned opium production, and production had dropped by 90%. But after that, it jumped to where they became the largest supplier in the world of this. So where does that leave us in the U.S.? Purdue Pharmaceutical, one of the poster children, you know, the Sackler family behind that, they were selling a lot of this stuff with very, very questionable means. But, of course, never forget that they weren't actual manufacturers of it. They were buying their stuff from Johnson & Johnson. And so Purdue is just the high-profile company. They've kept the actual pharmaceutical giants like Johnson & Johnson in the background on all of these press reports. They've pretty much they've kept them in the background in terms of the legal judgments against them. And, of course, the Trump administration helped them to pivot to a new protected business plan. So Purdue Pharmaceutical is now scrambling to discourage a Justice Department appeal of the bankruptcy deal. You see, when you have El Chapo with a Sinaloa drug cartel and they get their hands on him, they just take everything that he's got preemptively with civil asset forfeiture, just like they do poor people who they seize their cars and they don't even charge them with a crime. Now, they charged El Chapo with a crime, and we know that he is a drug lord, but they took all of his stuff. But when they go after Purdue Pharmaceutical and they go after Johnson & Johnson, they don't do that. They don't go in and take all their assets. No, no. They help them again, Johnson & Johnson, to pivot to the vaccine industry. And so Purdue Pharmaceutical and these opioid drug lords, you know, the ones that wear suits and ties and operate on Wall Street, those drug lords, they're allowed to negotiate with the federal government. They're allowed to negotiate with the various states as to how much money they'll turn over. And after they did these negotiations, many of the attorneys generals, various states, said we've been had. They've got a lot more money. We didn't realize that. The Department of Justice realized that they'd been had in these negotiations. So they're now they're trying to change that deal. Purdue Pharmaceutical launched a behind-the-scenes effort in recent days aimed at discouraging the Justice Department from appealing a pending multi-billion-dollar bankruptcy settlement for the OxyContin maker. The letter is framed as a direct appeal to Department of Justice officials and purports to be written by those injured by the company and members of the Sackler family. We collectively speak for the overwhelming majority of the state and local governments, organizations, and individuals harmed by Purdue and the Sacklers, said the letter. Ryan Hampton, an opioid activist who serves on the key committee negotiating the bankruptcy deal, expressed outrage at Purdue Pharma's efforts. He said this letter was highly inappropriate. It was wrong. He said it was written, proposed, and pushed at the 11th hour at the beckoning of Purdue Pharmaceutical. So this is they're trying to change the terms of the settlement and still protect themselves, and it looks like they'll probably get away with it. A doctor was charged in an opioids scheme, and then he tried to hire a Hell's Angel member to silence a witness. Never forget, when we look at what has happened this last year, this is one of the reasons why I'm covering this and going back over this, because when we look at the corruption of the American government in Afghanistan, and when we look at the financially incentivized medical malpractice this last year, never forget what happened with the opioid epidemic. Never forget how they gave sweetheart deals and golden parachutes and new legally protected businesses to these pharmaceutical companies to get into vaccines. And never forget how many doctors and pharmaceutical reps were prescribing these things for patients. You know, the thing that is so reprehensible in my mind with this opioid epidemic is that the vast majority of these people did not begin by trying to get a high, a recreational high. These were people that were trapped into this because they had doctors prescribing this for them when they had a pain condition. They would have an injury, or they would have surgery, or they have something else that was very painful. They would prescribe them opioids, and they would get addicted to the opioids, and then they had to start trying to find this on the black market. Chris Christie, in terms of supporting the prohibition of marijuana, gave the story when he was running for president of a guy that he knew in law school who became extremely successful, and he was a runner. He had a family. He had a very successful law practice. He injured his back. He got addicted to opioids because of that. He lost his job. He lost his family, and he eventually committed suicide. And so Chris Christie says, therefore, we must continue to prohibit marijuana. Marijuana, which is actually a treatment to get people off of the opioid addiction. Marijuana, which could be used in replacement of the opioids, a safe pain reliever, but also something that can get you over that addiction. That's what Chris Christie wanted to ban. And so when you look at the corruption behind this, when we look at what the doctors have done for money, just because somebody got a medical degree doesn't mean that they're not greedy, that they can't be bought. As a matter of fact, I think part of the problem that we're seeing this last year is that we have so many people who went into medicine not because they wanted to help people. They went into medicine because they wanted to get rich. Right? We all know doctors get rich, typically. That's a great way to get rich in America, is to become a doctor. And if that's your motivation for going into medicine, then you're very susceptible to taking a bribe from President Trump to do a clinical diagnosis of somebody having COVID, to diagnose them to see if they've got, use your PCR test or just do your own opinion, your clinical diagnosis to see if they've got COVID. So you can get that $13,000. And you do that before you treat them for a heart attack or anything else. Somebody comes in, they got a broken toe, treat them for COVID. Then you can get a bonus. The hospital can get a bonus at 25% for everything they do. That came out last August. American Hospital Association. It was only reported in one little place. Nobody else wanted to talk about that. That was a smoking gun, folks. They have incentivized this, and if you don't think these people can't be, you don't think these doctors and hospitals can be bought off, you haven't been paying attention through the opioid epidemic. And once these people, the love of money is the root of all evil, isn't it? And these people who went into the medical profession because they wanted to make money, oh, they're ripe for the picking, aren't they? And once they get addicted, once they get a taste of that money, that's the money addiction, not the opioid addiction. Once they get a taste of that money, oh, you've got them. They'll do anything. And then once things start to get dodgy with them, this particular doctor allegedly asked his acquaintance, who he thought was connected in a way to the Hells Angels, he asked, can you hire a member of the motorcycle gang to intimidate or kill this witness against me in this opioid epidemic trial? This guy's got to go, he told his contact. Healthcare fraud, illegal opioid distribution is what he is charged with. He was arrested June of last year for allegedly giving oxycodone prescriptions to patients without performing medical exams in exchange for $1,600 payments. Do you see what that is? That's chump change. So he would do illegal drugs, then to cover up his crimes, he would try to arrange a hit with a Hell's Angel for $1,600? Now, Trump's giving people 10 times that to start with. And then 25% bonus on every fee that you add. Now, you get them on a ventilator, which they never use for any other respiratory diseases before, really. I mean, look at the mad scramble by Trump to get all these ventilators out in the hands of the hospitals. We had individuals in hospitals who were technicians saying, this is insane. Look at how many of these they had. Remember the pictures that I showed you last year? Guys going through, and he says, look at all these. They're just sitting here. They're not used. Well, they want to make sure they get used because that's money that's not being made off of these things. And so you start diagnosing them with a clinical diagnosis because the government told you we don't have enough PCR tests. The ones that we have don't work. So you do a clinical diagnosis, you get your 25%, you get your $13,000, and then if you put them on ineffective treatments equivalent to putting leeches on their body and bleeding them, then you can get them sick enough, you can put them on a ventilator. Now you're hitting the big bucks, $39,000. This guy was getting $1,600 for selling opioids under the table to people. He's a petty criminal. Compared to the medical criminals that are the basis of this lockdown that we've had for the last year. It's not just financially incentivized medical malpractice. This is financially incentivized mass murder of a lot of people. Finally, a former Afghan interpreter says, you know, the vast majority of Afghans view the Taliban as the lesser of two evils compared to the United States. Think about that. After 20 years of the U.S. being there, they see the general people in Afghanistan know how bad the Taliban is, but they think that it's the lesser of two evils compared to the U.S. government. They said the only interaction most Afghans have had with the U.S. and its allies came via heavily armed and armored combat troops. He said the U.S. mistook the Afghan countryside as a theater of war, as opposed to a place where people actually lived. Now let's bring that home, because this war is being brought home to us. This is a war that began last year with President Trump. Economic sanctions at the beginning of war. And now they're going to focus on this war. And these people see our home here in America. They see your home if you're living in the UK or in Australia. They see your home or anywhere in Europe. They see your home as their battlefield now. They don't see it as a place where you live. They've got an agenda. And their interaction with you is increasingly going to be what we've seen in Australia. sitting in the armored, jackbooted thugs with the helmets and the body armor and the shields and the truncheons and the pepper spray and whatever else they roll out very quickly. Let me tell you, they've got a lot of crowd control weapons that they haven't used yet. That's a big industry. A lot of money to be made in selling all these crowd control things. I mean, they can hit you with directed energy beams that set your skin on fire. But they haven't pulled out the big artillery yet. They're waiting for that. And these people who have occupied Afghanistan for 20 years, operating it simply as a battlefield, they're ready to do that to your country, wherever you are, whatever your country is. This is a global war by the powerful against the people in every country. So when we come back, we're going to show what this looks like in Australia with the truckers. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
All right, let's talk about what's going on in Australia. I actually looked. I couldn't find much in terms of articles. I looked at several different Australian sites, and they shut things down. But I knew that they were having an effect because over the weekend, shortly after the trucker strike, they said, we're going to lock things down. We're going to block the roads. Not just a work stoppage, but we're going to actually block the roads. And they'd had a very effective one of these in terms of general strike by the truckers back in 1979 to get concessions from the government at that point in time. And they were saying, we're going to stop this authoritarian, draconian measures where nobody can go anywhere. You can't go any more than 3 miles from your home, locking down millions of people because you had one or two people who got a positive test, that kind of insanity, the zero COVID thing that is happening in Australia and New Zealand. And so we saw that there was some movement from the politicians. And I said, it looks like they are having something of an effect. At least they're afraid that something is going to happen. Because you had the same type of thing happen in the UK with Boris Johnson, when between 500,000 and 1 million people showed up in London, peacefully marching down the streets, because those types of demonstrations are typically peaceful, because what typically causes the issues, if you don't have agent provocateurs, it's usually the police attacking people. And we saw that in Australia as well. In Melbourne, you had a lot of people who showed up, and they didn't get violent. Mainly it was people who were already in Melbourne locked down. In Sydney, you had a lot of people because that was the capital. They were going to have a big demonstration there. They stopped, I think it was 38,000 different vehicles were stopped. They kept people from getting in. So you only had a few hundred people who were actually doing the protest in Sydney. And they were met by a couple of thousand cops who then got very, very violent with them. So what is going on with the truckers? Well, here's a bit of a report from the Australian media.
Great to have you with us. We begin with breaking news from Queensland, where truck drivers are right now protesting over mandatory vaccination on the Gold Coast. Today, Queensland reporter Jessica Millwood is at Reedy Creek. Jess, good morning to you. What's the scene like there now?
It's complete and utter chaos, Alex. Let me show you. These two trucks are pulled up here on the M1 southbound at Reedy Creek, and you can see that the traffic stretched back for kilometres. One of the truckies is joining me now. Brock, why have you guys done this today?
Mate, end all lockdowns, people go back to work and kids go back to school. That's what we want out of it. We've had enough of it.
You've had a lot of support, people driving past and
feeding. There's a lot of support, mate. The people that have showed up today is amazing. So we appreciate everyone that's come down. And these guys in blue, mate, they've been very...
Just get my cameraman to show you here, Alex, because there are...
Yeah, because there's only four of them.
Brock and said that if you don't move your truck, you're going to be towed.
Yeah, so that's unfortunately, that's just the way it is. There's risk in everything you do. But these blokes have been pretty lenient. It's nothing to hate against them. They do a great job. We respect everything they do, but it's all about choice at the end of the day. You know, if you don't want to get the vax, don't get the vax. If you do want to get it, I don't care, but just don't keep locking up people.
All right. Thank you, Brock. And Alex, we'll just show you, Pauline Hanson is here as well, a lot of supporters, so we'll keep you posted on this situation. These trucks are refusing to go anywhere anytime soon.
Jess, we will come back to you very soon. Thank you so much for that. Pfizer is now available to all Australians aged 16 to 39 after the federal government expanded.
They never stop, do they? This is a worldwide thing. It doesn't matter what country you're in, they're constantly hawking for the big pharmaceutical companies. These multinational corporations that rule us, the people that you're not allowed to criticize. You want to know who rules you? Look to see who you're not allowed to criticize in this dictatorship that has now descended on the entire world. But going back to South Australia, South Australia, one of the states in Australia, has dropped the vaccine requirement for truckers. You see how they try to carve off exemptions for the people who are fighting this? So the truckers are out there. They're worried about the truckers. The truckers have got leverage over them, so they try to buy the truckers off. These people are nothing other than mafia. They're mafia figures. And they want to divide and conquer us. And let me just say, and I hope that I think these truckers are smarter than that, than to just take their exemption. They know they've got kids that can't go to school. They can't live a life. They've got family members who have other jobs besides trucking. They also need to understand that they're going to eventually have their throats slit by this type of government as well. You will either hang together or you will hang separately. And we have to revolt against this draconian global tyranny that is affecting every single country. The state of South Australia has dropped the upcoming vaccine requirement for truckers in the wake of protests and freight delays. Buy them off. The regulation was set to go into effect September the 24th, and it would have required truck drivers entering the state of South Australia to have received at least one COVID vaccine shot. Now the regulation has been scrapped. Still unclear how much effect the planned trucker protest had on the sudden change of plans. You don't think that it had an effect? Come on, they didn't make this deal to anybody other than the ones who were pushing back. And that's the point. If we all push back in every line of work, don't just depend on one group of people pushing back. Don't think that it's just going to be the nurses or the doctors that push back that don't want to get vaccinated, or the truckers or the police who push back or the military who pushes. But we've got to all push back at once. And the time we've got to do it is right now. If we don't do it now, they're going to lock us down for good. These chains that they put on us last year are getting really hard. They harden. It's kind of like they're setting up. According to XYZ News, yesterday's protests in Australia, that's actually the name, XYZ News. Sounds like a redacted or generic name, does it? Anyway, yesterday's protests, they said, in Australia have taken a serious toll on people. There were mass arrests, mass fines, and completely unnecessary police brutality against people who were simply standing still in silence. As a matter of fact, I imagine XYZ News is an independent organization, or they wouldn't have said that. So the mainstream media is never going to say that. They said as people stood together to support truckers and their medical freedom, that was what they saw. As a matter of fact, this is some more a video over the weekend in Australia. I don't see any trucks in sight here, but look at the number of people. They're just standing there peacefully. They're standing in the streets. They're not wearing masks. That's the key thing. They're showing up en masse, but not in masks. Two protests, a kind of a silent protest. And that was peaceful. Very peaceful protest. And it goes on for quite some time. You can see a lot of people there. So in response on social media, it was very troubling to see, and it gives you an insight into how these people are getting away with this. A lot of people trolling response of the truckers. And one person said, what they, in other words, the truckers, fail to understand is that they have a choice. With the choice comes consequences. Here's your choice. No vax? Well, that's okay. But the consequence is that you can't move around Australia spreading a virus, potentially. That's our choice. So you're either going to get a test and a jab or you're going to stay out of our communities. I retweeted that with a comment. I said, you need to get a dictionary and look up the difference between choice and coercion. Assuming that they haven't changed that definition as they have with the definition of a vaccine. Look, this is the type of thing that we've seen from all of these. This person ought also look up the definition of dictatorship. We've seen the same type of cynical presentation of a choice by Biden, saying, well, you got a choice. You can either, you know, be imprisoned forever, or you can get the jab. It's just your choice. We don't care. You had Jacinda Ardern a year ago saying, well, you know, we're going to put these people in a concentration camp, and then we'll give them a test later. And if they pass the test, they can get out. If they don't want to take the test, they'll stay there till they do. That's their choice. They just want to stay in a prison camp, obviously, because they don't want to obey my dictates, my orders. So if you don't want to, you're making a choice. You can either obey me, or I'll kill you. How about that? That's your choice. You obey me or I kill you. That's a dictatorship. That's not choice. It's so cynical what these people are doing. But they've got their little minions out there so brainwashed that they're repeating this stuff. Another one says, just get the vaccine, with some explicatives, and let's get on with it. Did I get the vaccine because I thought I needed it? No, I got it because it's necessary to help us get on with life again. Not just for me, but for all of you. So book it today and just do it. In other words, I sold out. I bowed to this dictatorship because they gave me no choice. So I'm going to say that you shouldn't be doing anything about this either. One person replied to that and said, do you ask everyone if they've had the flu shot or if they've had the polio vaccine or if they've had the measles shot? No, it's none of your business. And if you have had it, you should be 100% safe. So just move along. Another one says, no, if you want to jab yourself with that excrement, be happy with your decision, but leave those alone that question what is going into everybody's bodies. You're no hero for having the jab. You just believe the narrative that they spun you without questioning, and you obey people without any questioning, without questioning their authority. And then I liked this response. One person said, let's get on with it. Let's get this right. There are over 4,000 pedophiles in the Child Protection Register in New South Wales, just one of the Australian states. 4,000 pedophiles in the Child Protection Register. Now, these 4,000 pedophiles do not need to show their ID. They don't need to show papers in order to get into a cafe or a pub or a grocery store, because that would be a, quote, invasion of privacy. But the rest of us now will be under vaccine passports. So what does this look like in America? Well, we've got bus drivers in Chicago, as the Marxist mayor there, Lori Lightfoot, put in a vaccine mandate for all city employees. You had bus drivers who said, well, that's it, I'm out of here. And it was about 10% of the bus drivers that walked. Now, I want you to think about this. Over and over again, we see these metrics. This is from USA Today, saying only 1 in 5 say that they won't get a jab. Well, that's 20%. Do you think that 20% of us can shut down this economy? And I think it's higher than that, because that's coming from USA Today. You had 10% of the bus drivers, when push came to shove, literally, push you to get this, and now we're going to shove it into your arm. When push came to shove, they walked. You know, there's a lot of people who say that they'll vote for this person or say they're going to go to an event or say they're going to do this or say they're going to do that. And so it might be 30% who say that. It might be 20% who say that. But it'll probably wind up being 10%. Is that enough to shut this down? You bet it is. Because here's what's happening in Chicago. So they put this out there as an ultimatum. 10% of the school bus drivers say, well, that's it. We're not going to do it. So now what they're doing is they're going to offer $1,000 credit for families if they've got children with disabilities to get these students with disabilities to school. They're going to give each of these students a $1,000 voucher to take Uber, Lyft, or other ride-sharing services. And they said almost 1,000 of them are trying to find transport to and from school. So give 1,000 people $1,000, that's $1 million right there, just for starters. And that's just for the disabled students. What are they going to do about the rest of them to get them to school? They already had staffing issues. Everybody's got staffing issues. And with all these staffing issues that are happening right now, we have leverage. And that is a short-term situation. This is why I say these chains that they've put on our wrists and on our ankles are hardening for us. Because the reason they're pushing this, the reason they don't have IDs for voters, the reason they don't have IDs for pedophiles, thousands of them roaming around and they don't have to show their papers. They don't have to show a Scarlet A or a Scarlet P or whatever to identify themselves. But we do as the unvaccinated. Why are they doing this? We have a momentary leverage here because they want to get rid of the bus drivers. They want to replace the bus drivers. They want to replace the truck drivers with autonomous trucks. And they're ready to roll that out real shortly. And they will do that in response to us not showing up. That's why it's imperative that we not let this slowly roll out until we gradually wake up. For a year and a half, for 537 days, I've been telling people this is the plan, and we got to stop this now. And people are just now starting to wake up. But if you don't wake up and do something about it, it's a difference between waking up and doing something about it. If you don't do anything about it now, they're going to be cutting people from every walk of life. It was 8 years ago that I did a report about the projections in South Korea saying that by 2030, their magic date where they have their new Great Reset Society cemented into place, by 2030 in South Korea, they said 70% of doctors and lawyers replaced by artificial intelligence. And they went through the transportation industry. It was one of the first ones they wanted to go into and replace people. And so they're going to, as you've already seen them in fast food, they say, well, nobody wants to have food that was touched by human hands, so we're going to have the illusion that no humans came in contact with the food by having robots flip the burgers and having robots deliver it to you, or we'll put the humans behind TV screens so you can imagine that they're not in contact with your food and so forth. And so they are very anxious to replace workers from entry-level positions all the way up to doctors and lawyers, people at the entry level of the corporations all the way up to the accountants and other people, managers. They want to get rid of people. And right now, they're not yet ready to. They're close. They're very close. That's why we've got to do it very rapidly. We've got to push back against this. And so now is the moment. And if we don't seize this moment right now, they're going to be rolling out their robots in all these different areas or their artificial intelligence, and they'll say, just fine, just stay home. I don't care. I don't need you anymore. Right now they need us. For a very limited amount of time, they need us. We can stop them from putting in this great reset. We can stop them from replacing us. We can stop them from locking us down and enslaving us. But we have a very limited window. So she's going to try to replace them with Uber and Lyft, and then, of course, the Uber and Lyft drivers are soon to be replaced with autonomous cars because, as Travis Kalanick said a few years ago, the thing that makes the Uber expensive is that other dude in the car with you, and we're going to get rid of him. But they're going to use those people right now. They're going to tell them, pay them a small wage to show up with their own cars. So 10% of the bus drivers, but it's also happening with the police. especially in Chicago. Here's a Chicago report about what is happening with the police.
Yes, Aaron. So this battle is playing out in cities and towns across the country. Police unions in Oklahoma, in Seattle, in New York, as well as in Massachusetts, are pushing back, like you said. And last Monday, hours after the FDA fully approved the Pfizer vaccine, Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot said that all city employees would be required to be vaccinated against COVID-19. She said that there was no way around it because they needed to protect themselves as well as the public that they serve. Just as quickly as she made that announcement, the head of the Fraternal Order of Police there vowed not to comply. And this is something we're seeing in a lot of cities and towns, large and small, around the country.
Yeah, exactly. And along those lines, as you've got police in a lot of different places saying, we're not going to do this. Continuing on with that report, I didn't play the entire thing. That was pushed to me, by the way, by Google. They want people to see that. Because the person there who's the anchor, when they cut from the reporter on the street back to him, he says, well, you know, they've got a lot of ways that they're going to incentivize this. They've talked about how they can give a little bit of extra money to the police who get the jab, or they can give them extra sick days for when they get the jab and so forth, because they know they're going to get sick days. I mean, that's the thing right now. These guys go out. If they get the jab and the cops get sick, as a lot of people do, they have to use a sick day to take that as well. So we'll give them a little bit more extra sick days. And, you know, if they get sick because of the jab, or if they get sick later on with COVID after they've taken the jab, because, you know, we know they don't work, then we'll give them some special treatment. They won't have to use a sick day and all. That's the little kind of, give them a donut. How about that? You know, you could probably, that's not a problem. Playing to the stereotype of the cops, you know, they're going to go for the donuts. So you got, already they can get a donut a day from Krispy Kreme. So, hey, what else can you do to incentivize people to get them to sell their liberty for a bowl of porridge? Or my favorite story, I think, from last week was the prison where they said to the prisoners, if you get the jab, we'll give you 10 ramen noodle packages. Is that like a dollar or something? Ramen noodles are famously cheap. The thing that students in my generation would survive off of because they didn't have enough money. So we'll give you 10 ramen noodles, but of course you'll still be in prison. We're not going to let you out. And that's the situation for us as well. You know, you sell your liberty and your birthright for this little bowl of porridge like Esau, and you're still in prison. You're still going to wear a mask. And oh, by the way, you know, now they're saying country after country, we got Israel, we got Austria, saying, well, we had these, we defined fully vaxxed as people who had two vaccines, and then you get your little permission slip to go wherever you want. But now we're going to revoke that permission slip and make it contingent on you getting a third shot, and a fourth, and a fifth, and a sixth. I've had people send me cards from other countries and said, look at this. There's slots for 8 different shots here. It never ends. We now have instead of not just the military-industrial complex that is ruling us here in the U.S., but now we've instituted worldwide a medical-industrial complex that is running a medical dictatorship that demands that you buy their product as a condition of living your life. Doesn't this look like Obamacare? Oh, but it was so much better when Trump did it, right? That's why it was necessary to have Trump there instead of somebody like Obama or instead of Hillary Clinton. Because if they had taken Obamacare to the next level to say you've got to buy these services from a private company in order to live your life, people wouldn't put up with it. But they put Trump there, who pretends that he's against globalism, when he's the biggest globalist we've ever had in office. And you get people like Alex Jones telling people, oh, he's the reincarnation of George Washington practically, and he's playing 4D chess. Don't worry. I know he's not doing what he said he was going to do, but he's just doing this to deceive the enemy. Now, he really is secretly on your side. No, take a look at what he's doing. I had this listener send this to me. National strike to your tents, America. And they're saying starting Labor Day, September the 6th, they're trying to organize a mass resistance of just doing a strike. They said Americans are facing the most dangerous time since the formation of our great nation in 1776. Now is the time for all Americans to come together and to make our voices heard in a peaceful nationwide strike, demanding all the freedoms and liberties paid for by many sacrifices of those who came before us. It's quite clear our country is moving in the wrong direction. Thousands are dying already from the forced mandates. In a country where no one has the right to inject anyone with anything against our will. No one has the right to force masking or social distancing or lockdowns or business closures or loss of employment and income or to coerce, threaten, shame, or otherwise intimidate anyone into anything that threatens the health and well-being of any individual. Not even your doctor has a right to do that. No one has a right to segregate, to lock out, to penalize anyone for the personal, private, medical decisions that they make regarding their body. And so they point out, the strike idea was organized by TNALC member Lex Green in a recent column. He said, the idea has caught the attention of many who believe, just as we do, that we the people hold the ultimate power in this country. And we do. The problem is, we have to get this out far and wide. And it has to be publicized. And it has to, people have to see and understand that this is why their sales dropped. So, again, I'm passing this on to you. The Strike for Freedom on Labor Day or on September the 11th. The key is to join it and to stay out until our freedom and liberty is recognized again from sea to shining sea. I think September 11th gives people more time to do it. And I think that would be an appropriate date. Because you understand that this is part of the plan behind that false flag of September the 11th. This was the other shoe to drop. It took them 20 years to drop that. They dropped the Patriot Act and Homeland Security right away. They dropped the Afghanistan war right away on us. But this war, the war against everyone worldwide, was planned, rehearsed, over and over again on an annual basis from Dark Winter 2 months before September 11th, then the false flag event of the anthrax attack a week later, pushing out the regulations 2 months after that, the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act, and then for 20 years, every year they did at least one of these, the last one, Event 201. But the very first one, Dark Winter, was done before. These two things, both the Patriot Act, the authorization for worldwide war, and then this simulation, which every year was about locking everyone down, and look, everybody died in their simulation because you weren't draconian enough with the lockdown. And then the second part of it, oh, look, everybody died because you didn't approve an experimental vaccine and rush that out and force it on everybody. Those two things were there from the very beginning. That's how I knew this was a fraud, from the very beginning. I knew this before Trump participated in it 537 days ago. Because I knew about Dark Winter, and I knew about these annual simulations, and I watched the CDC do this on an annual basis with the flu vaccine. I knew that it was fundamentally about their greed and their corruption and their coercion to get people to get vaccines, and I knew about Bill Gates's ID 2020 and his immunization agenda 2030, all of that together. And then, of course, there's a Great Reset. We know what this is about. We have to stand together to oppose this. These are two things coming from people in the military. This is coming from Corporal. He says, thank you. I am a Marine Corps and Infantry combat veteran. Going back to 2009, he says, and I am a huge supporter here in Arizona. I got kicked out of the Phoenix VA, and the cops were called on me to escort me out for not wearing a mask. And let me just interject here into his letter. They have said everywhere, not just the veterans, but it's everybody. They're constantly saying, we've got to deny these people who don't get our vaccine. We've got to deny them medical care. We have to deny them Social Security benefits. We have to deny them the ability to travel, not just the ability to work or to go to school, the ability to travel, but also the things that we have paid for, the things that they have promised, you know, as part of all of this in terms of health benefits that they have promised to people who are in the military, they'll take that away. Social Security that people pay into their entire life and have made promises, they will take that away. Oh, by the way, they're saying that they're going to be insolvent, Social Security, in 12 years. How can that happen? I mean, we just spent $6 trillion and didn't even think twice about it last year. They're talking about universal basic income. Oh, no, we can't do Social Security. Maybe we'll have to, instead of means testing it, maybe we'll test it based on whether or not you've had your vaccines. Have you had all of your vaccines? Because we know we've got a long list of vaccines now that we want you to take. Going back to this retired corporal, he said the cops were called on him to escort him out of the Phoenix VA. He said, it's been disgusting, but I know what is happening is wrong. I've been going there for 12 years, and I still have a bad taste in my mouth with them. Keep up the great work. God will see us through all of this. Another letter from Fastus in the West. He says, my son-in-law, an Army major at Bragg, has been given the ultimatum about the jab. Take the jab or be discharged. Can you imagine taking a jab without knowing the ingredients? Every day, his boss shows him the orders. We had over the weekend, we had Representative Thomas Massey out of Kentucky. He held a conference call with many military service members who are opposed to the vaccine mandates. And he's written a piece of legislation and has several co-sponsors that would ban a military mandate. It's called H.R. 3860. H.R. 3860. If you're in the military, if you know anybody that's in the military, even if you're not in the military, you don't know anybody in the military, we need to hang together with these people, write a letter to your congressman and say, stop this. This is wrong. Congressman Thomas Massey has fielded dozens of communications from distraught active and reserve servicemen and women concerned about the impending military mandate. The mandate is scheduled to be in place by September the 15th or sooner. And, of course, this was written just before they dropped the hammer with their phony approval. So it's in now, right? But anyway, there was a process, they said the press secretary John Kirby of the Pentagram. There's a process we go through to counsel the individual both from a medical and from a command perspective about using a religious exemption. We take freedom of religion and worship seriously in the military. Just like they take their responsibilities to their allies, their responsibilities to American citizens seriously at Kabul Airport. Oh, they take this stuff very seriously. Just don't take them seriously when they talk. He says, it's one of the things that we sign up to defend. So, yeah. Said many service members, at least until now, who have refused the jab, would disagree with his claim that the military takes freedom of religion and worship seriously, writes the New American. And they're the ones that have the report here on what Thomas Massey is doing. On this last Friday, August the 27th, Massey moderated a conference call that included a dozen armed service members with experiences ranging from a first-year Air Force Academy cadet to a major with 17 years of experience, including combat experience. Topics covered were widespread but centered around the willful disregard of the science involved in this matter and the total disregard of people or their concerns in favor of achieving total compliance with the set policies. And I read to you last week a screenshot that was sent to me anonymously. Well, it wasn't sent to me anonymously, and they gave me some identification, but I didn't talk about who it was, but it was a chatter going back and forth between some Marine officers saying, we've got a lot of health issues from people who've had this vaccine, and they're sweeping that under the carpet. They don't want to talk about that. I'm paraphrasing, but I read it last week. Anyway, topics covered were widespread, centered around the willful disregard for science. Media personnel were not provided the names of the witnesses, but Massey, Congressman Massey, advised that his office had vetted each one of the speakers for authenticity, and the teleconference was run through his office. The reasons for the anonymity stemmed from the intense backlash the witnesses stated that they've been subjected to, including extreme pressure and threats so pervasive that one member reported the recent suicide of a vaccine non-compliant enlisted man. One soldier, identified only as Member 10, is a 6-year veteran of the Air National Guard, a frontline health care worker as well. The science is ignored, he said, in favor of a vax everyone at all cost position. He said superiors are aware of the fact that soldiers with prior exposure to COVID have a better immunity response than could be achieved with the vaccine. As a matter of fact, Rand Paul just responded to that. mocking all the people and their Fauciisms, said, come on, I don't want to hear any more snot-nosed journalists hitting me with Fauciisms. Read the science. And he linked to a recent Harvard study that said exactly that, that the immunity was not just simply better, but it was 27 times better. And we'll talk about those metrics coming up. Actually, natural immunity was 13 times better. They had a viral load. The people who got vaccinated had a viral load that was 250 times worse than the unvaccinated. But in terms of comparing it to natural immunity, the people who had natural immunity were, the natural immunity they showed in this Harvard study was 13 times better than the immunity that came from the vaccine. Oh, by the way, natural immunity is real immunity, and it really lasts. If it doesn't last, it's not real immunity. You haven't trained the immune system. If the immune system is trained, it lasts, and it does that when you encounter something and take care of it naturally. This Air National Guard frontline healthcare worker lamented the unnecessary risk of requiring the vaccine for individuals who have natural immunity already, especially when they have health indicators, that suggested the vaccine is going to be an additional risk. Quote, I've personally witnessed fellow soldiers forced out because of health issues that prevented them from safely getting vaccinated. He says superiors would rather see experienced veterans quit if such action improved the vaccination percentages in their units. You know, we're constantly told when we see these woke individuals, you remember a couple of months ago you saw the viral videos, the recruitment videos that were being put out by the Russians, the recruitment video that's put out by the Chinese, you know, rugged, hard training, you know, making people stronger, faster, and yet we have cartoon recruitment videos of the LGBT people and a lesbian who is talking about her two moms and so forth. That's what we're looking for. And the people would reply and say, well, you know, these people, all we need to do is be able to push buttons to win wars. Now, this happened before the total collapse in Afghanistan. And these people do not want to have unvaccinated people. But, you know, hey, it's not any reason to exclude somebody because they're so preoccupied with their navel or lower down that that becomes the central focus of their entire life and they can't focus or think about anything else. Nothing else to them matters. But we want those kind of people in, don't we? Member number 9 is a captain of the Air Force, experienced decorated pilot. I began the religious exemption process, he said, months ago. He noted that he's not yet fully adjudicated. He said the officers in charge of the process are yes men, and they only want to protect their own careers. Oh, sounds like everybody in the pentagram. This Air Force officer, once squeaky clean service record, has now been irreparably damaged. His future assignments have been canceled. He has been taken off the flight line and has been issued 3 letters of reprimand, and he's been cited and suspended for refusal to follow command, all while his paperwork is still pending. The Air Force has invested millions of dollars in training this pilot, who is now currently sitting at home all day long, answering an occasional email. He said, I had the support of my direct commander. I put this exemption paperwork in February, but I keep getting denials up the chain. Our flight surgeon labeled me as a medical extremist, and that was put into my permanent file, an action that I have no way to appeal. So he is a senior pilot and a flight instructor. He has been taken off the flight line, even after they've spent millions of dollars in training him, simply because he will not take this vaccine that does nothing to stop transmissibility. It does nothing to protect people. And if it did protect people, you wouldn't have to worry about what we take, would you? He describes himself as member 4, describes himself as a Christian patriot who joined the military out of a sheer love of country. I put forward my religious accommodation request in December 2020. I had the full support of my command structure. My request was denied by the Surgeon General of the Army without any reason given. And corroborating many of the experiences shared by other members on the call, an enlisted Navy man recalled an officer telling him, you are the reason your mom and dad are going to die. An enlisted Air Force E-4 wanted to refuse a vaccine as a close family member did just die from a blood clot immediately after getting the vaccine. In both of these cases, they have been threatened with a court-martial, or in the best-case scenario, a dishonorable discharge. Quote, I wanted to serve my country, and now I'm looking at a result in which I am lumped in with felons and rapists. I won't even be able to own a firearm, lamented the enlisted Navy man, who is still under contract and cannot simply resign. So we're looking at bus drivers, cops, military personnel that are they've invested a great deal of money in, flight instructor as well as a pilot, healthcare workers who, for some reason, now they've got to get the vaccine. Colorado has mandated the vaccines for healthcare workers. This happened on Monday, a 6-1 vote on Monday. A board, by the way, this is a public health board, which is not elected. An unelected medical dictatorship, 6-1, voted that all healthcare workers are going to have to get the jab in Colorado. And they've got to get it by September 30th. If this is an emergency, why do they get to wait for a full month? As a matter of fact, they've waited for a year and a half already with these people on the front line, exposed to people all the time. I would think that these medical professionals should be capable of understanding and comparing the risk of getting COVID to the risk of this vaccine. They've seen people who've gotten the vaccine. They have treated for a year and a half people that they were told had COVID. They don't want to get it, so they're going to be compelled to get it. This is evidence that this is a bold-faced lie. When you have healthcare workers who've been on the front lines doing this for a year and a half and say, no, I'd rather take my chances than to do this, because I've seen what this looks like. There is no emergency, folks. There is no pandemic. There is no emergency. They can't even produce the phony numbers to back it up anymore. 2,000 healthcare workers are suing in Maine to block the vaccine mandate. All the plaintiffs seek in this lawsuit is to be able to continue to provide the health care that they have provided to patients for their entire careers, and the same protective measures that they were considered to be superheroes for the last 18 months. But in Maine, the Mills administration announced last week that all health care providers in the state of Maine must be vaccinated by October the 1st. How is it that they're all coming up with almost exactly the same day? It doesn't matter what state it is. As a matter of fact, it doesn't matter what country it is. They're all operating off the same script. And it doesn't matter what the science is. It doesn't matter what the experience has been. It doesn't matter how much is revealed about the harmful side effects or the lack of effectiveness of these vaccines. It doesn't matter that we now know that it is actually making the transmission worse. Nothing matters to these people. Just plow on ahead. Warp speed ahead. And this has gone again from the very beginning with Trump. This is what is so worrying about this. There's nobody in the Republican Party, really, that's standing up against it. Massey is standing up against it. Good for him. Rand Paul, to a lesser extent. Other than that, and I'd say Ron Johnson has been having some statements about that. Other than that, nobody's really standing up to this. They'll take measures here and there. Ron DeSantis saying you're not going to exclude people out of stores, but not doing anything to protect people who are employees from being fired. That's only been done in Montana. Only in Montana have the Republican governor and the Republican legislature stopped people from being fired because of a vaccine dictate. Resistance to the vaccine mandate grows among tens of thousands of people, that reports WND. And Matt Staver, founder of Liberty Counsel, runs one of the legal teams that across the country are now facing a nonstop barrage of telephone and email requests for help fighting demands that students and employees take these experimental shots. Talking about this, Matt Staver said, he calls it the actually, it's WND who uses this phrase, the state-turned-church apparatus. That's exactly what we're talking about here. The state-turned-church. We're not talking about science. We're talking about religion, a religion where Fauci has become the high priest. And anybody who is a heretic is going to be severely punished. You're going to be essentially burned at the stake if you disagree with this new church religion. But Matt Staver talks about a testimony from a healthy Virginia woman. She wrote, "As soon as I received the vaccine, I immediately felt shooting pains in my right eye, and I noticed red blood vessels had busted on my eyeball. I began experiencing light and sound sensitivity, as well as a strong sense of smell. The next day, I woke up to horrible acid reflux, nausea, diarrhea, stomach cramps, stabbing stomach pains, as well as neck pains, throbbing in the back and left side of my head. I then developed insomnia, anxiety, nerve pains, and vomiting, as well as a metallic taste in my mouth. I had a sore and swollen tongue. I also began having muscle spasms in my legs. The diarrhea, which lasted for 6 weeks, caused a large amount of weight loss, eventually 72 pounds. When the diarrhea subsided, the shooting neuropathy in my legs, arms, and torso began. After about 7 weeks, my eyes began to start having shooting pains and my vision was affected. Now, she reports having tremors in the occipital region of my head when laying down, as well as my body shaking and muscle and joint pains. I also have memory issues and brain fog, as well as ear popping. I then developed bulging veins on my feet, hands, neck, and face." So when you look at the mandates for this, you know, the media, the absurd propaganda campaign that the FDA has gone into over ivermectin, a drug available in pill form for humans, over a billion doses put out over the decades prior to any of this, manufactured by Merck, which now doesn't want to manufacture it anymore, and then the FDA coming out and calling it horse medicine, horse medicine, horse medicine, horse medicine all the time with all these robots and Twitter bots constantly repeating this. The robots in the media, the Twitter bots on social media. "Oh, all you people taking horse medicine, you're a bunch of sheep taking horse medicine." Like, what an obvious propaganda campaign that is. It's not even up to the intellectual standards of Pravda and Izvestia in the Soviet Union. This is childish propaganda. People should be ashamed of putting this stuff out. I mean, how idiotic can you be? And how obvious can it be when they go to such extremes to mandate this? You know that something is up with this. They have so many different agendas with this, but nothing has ever been more important and is more important to them than anything else. Walt Disney, Walmart are among the major companies that have told some or all of their employees that they've got to get fully vaccinated this fall. Why wait till now, right? And why give them a couple of more months if this is an emergency? Because it's not an emergency. It's just ugly politics with an agenda. With an agenda. It's nothing more than ugly politics, says Jay Inslee. And he says, it's pretty disingenuous to say that you're going to have a religious exemption and then place so many caveats. Actually, this is not him. This is Senator Doug Erickson, a Republican, said it's disingenuous to say that you're going to have a religious exemption and then place so many caveats and so many rules and restrictions on it that it makes it almost impossible for somebody to use it honestly. See, Jay Inslee can do that. He's one of the people who's pushing it. He says it's ugly politics to resist this. It's ugly politics what he's doing. And that's the amazing thing about this. The politics of the FDA. Delta Airlines, which opposed Georgia's voter ID laws, now forces unvaccinated employees to test for COVID-19. So you got to have your vax papers, but not your voting papers. But I think the best example of this yet is to start talking about these pedophiles. Look up your statistics. That guy who responded in Australia said in his state, 4,000 pedophiles. He said they don't have to show a card, go into a cafe or to a restaurant or to walk or do anything else. But we do. We're treated worse than pedophiles. I think that's the comparison that needs to be made. Green card applicants will now need to have COVID vaccines to be eligible, So, you know, just come across the border as an illegal alien. We're going to punish people who come here legally. We're going to punish people. You're not even going to fly into this country, according to Biden, unless you're vaccinated. Even if you have a negative test, you're not going to be able to get on the plane. But, of course, they're going to be testing people who are vaccinated as well. There's never ends. Never ends. So as this moves on, the question becomes, will vaccine mandates kill the U.S. economy? Well, I think it will. I think that is the design. I think that's been the design from the very beginning. None of this stuff makes sense unless you look at the plan that they've been talking about for decades that they want to have in place by 2030. Whether it's the UN 2030 agenda or whether it's the Great Reset, they both have the same tactics, goals, and outcome and ending date of 2030. And it is designed to take this economy down. They want us all living in little tiny tin cans, as I pointed out the other day. They're all making the move right now to the metaverse. They want you living in a virtual world. They want to make real life so horrible. They want to make real life impossible. You will not be able to move a step. You will own nothing. You will go nowhere. You will have what they will give you. They will keep you in this prison, but they will allow you to have a virtual escape through the portal of virtual reality in the metaverse that they're going to control. And this is not a wild conspiracy theory, folks. You're seeing a lot of articles about this. If you look at it, you'll see articles everywhere. Wall Street is all about this. Silicon Valley is all about this. Zuckerberg said on Facebook, we're going to not even see ourselves as a social media company anymore. We're moving to becoming a metaverse company. Microsoft is saying the same thing. When you see Microsoft and Facebook and Wall Street and Silicon Valley all on the same page, you better believe this is what their plan is. It doesn't mean they're going to be successful with you. But this is what their plan is for all of society. So as we move forward in this, let's just take a look at some of the people and where they line up on this. Again, there is no help coming for us from the Republicans. Trump was a traitor, a outright traitor. And there's a lot more lined up behind him, like Kristi Noem, being cheered on by Reason Magazine. Reason Magazine says she's right about supporting employer vaccine mandates. Let me just rephrase that. Reason Magazine cheers Kristi Noem because she is pushing a corporatocracy. She wants a global governance by multinational corporations. That's what we're talking about. The employer vaccine mandates is just the beginning of this. They criticize Ron DeSantis at Reason, saying that he's prohibited both public and private entities from requiring proof of vaccination, creating conflict with several industries, including cruise lines that would like to mandate vaccines. Montana Governor Greg Gianforte has done the same thing in his state, except he's gone further. You know, you've got what they fail to mention is that Ron DeSantis is not, and the Republicans in Florida are not protecting employees. They're protecting customers from being kicked out of the public square. There's two Republican state legislators in South Dakota have proposed a similar ban on private vaccine mandates. Now think about this. Why should there be private vaccine mandates? How do you support this as a libertarian? They have completely lost their way. Completely lost their way. Reason, the Cato Institute, Libertarian Think Tank, the Heritage Foundation, Conservative Think Tank, these people have lost their way. They began by cheerleading corporate destruction of free speech. Well, they should be allowed to do that because they're corporations. And the left is allowing them to do it because right now the people who are being purged are conservatives. And the conservatives can't bring themselves, the conservatives and libertarians who have always loved business, they can't bring themselves to criticize the businesses. You see how that works? Do you understand, and we should tell this to the liberals, do you understand why the purge right now is predominantly against conservatives? It's because the conservatives won't criticize corporations just like they won't criticize Trump. That's why they used Trump. That's why they used corporations. First to take away your free speech, now to take away your informed consent about medical care. And the left is all about this. Why? because they bought into this whole idea because they saw it being used against conservatives. And because they don't have any principles, they're just pragmatists for the most part. And there's a lot of pragmatism with conservatives as well, instead of looking at principles and looking where this is going. So they bring in these corporations, they bring in Trump, they bring in the Republicans to punish the conservatives. The left applauds and loves it and says, yeah, that's good. I like the results of that. So let's embrace that tactic. They don't understand that it's going to be them next, and it will be them next. They're just doing this now because the conservatives are too stupid to push back against Trump, too stupid to push back against corporations, just like these libertarians are too stupid to push back against these corporations. Here's the way they put it on Reason. They say, unlike DeSantis and Gianforte, they like Kristi Noem. She's not opposing the ban on private vaccine passports on grounds that the government does not and should not have the right to bully business. See, we shouldn't be bullying business. Business should bully individuals. Leave the businesses alone. They should rule us, says Reason, says Heritage Foundation, say the conservatives, says Trump, and the conservatives all fall in line. Now, we don't want to bully corporations. The lefties who have always hated corporations don't want to bully the corporations because the corporations are attacking right now the very conservatives who stand aside. So, yeah, you know, when we look at this, she says, I don't have the authority as governor to tell them what to do. Corporations. She doesn't? No, the purpose of government is to protect our God-given rights. And I would just say to the conservatives out there who are Christians, let me just tell you what James said. He said, you know, you give a place of preference to the rich men who come in among you. But isn't it the rich who dishonor the poor? Isn't it the rich who drag you into their courts? Isn't the rich who exploit you? Yes, it is. We'll be right back.
Common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
I've got more to say about vaccines and certainly more to say about the story that I hit at the very end of the show yesterday about a new DNA vaccine that enters into your DNA, but it also enters through the skin in a novel way as well in terms of its delivery. Being funded, by the way, by the Department of Defense, and they were giving a lot of money to it over a year ago. So the question is going to be, when is that going to drop? But let's have a little bit of good news first. I began with what I think is good news, what is happening in Australia. I'm glad to see that the government has gone soft there, just like Boris Johnson went soft, as you had a massive demonstration, people protesting this. And I mentioned it a few days ago. I said, you know, this is something to think about As New American says, we've never supported protests, and we don't support them now as a way to do this. And I said, well, there are better ways to do it, but we need to try everything that we can. You need to understand that just like January the 6th, you can always have some agent provocateurs, or you can always have people who are actually part of the group who go bonkers, who get violent. Even if the vast majority of the people, vast majority of the people are peaceful, they will be tarnished by that. And so I said, probably the best way to do this is to, if you're going to have a massive event, you try to do it indoors or try to do it in one spot where you just speak to people, and instead of having movement and that type of thing. But we have to do whatever we can. And I think the risk that there's going to be violence, the risk that we are going to be labeled as extremists, is a risk that we're going to have to take, because it's only going to get worse if we sit down and do nothing about this. So I don't want to discourage anybody from a protest. I just want to say, you know, we all understand now, certainly after January the 6th, what the issues are on that. And my opposition to January the 6th was not based on the fact that it was a protest. My opposition was based on the fact that it was to support President Trump and the Stop the Steal nonsense. When it was President Trump's acquiescence and enabling of the lockdown, he refused to hold rallies all throughout 2020. So why would he hold a rally for his own benefit on January the 6th? He wouldn't hold rallies throughout the campaign. He wouldn't hold the RNC convention. He was the one responsible for the mail-in election. And when I say a mail-in election, as I had one person write me and say, well, you know, I'm blind. I've always voted with mail-in. I don't think that's a problem. That's not what we're talking about. They were mailing the ballots out to people without any verification. People were getting ballots from multiple jurisdictions. That type of corruption, that new level of corruption, was, I think, set up to make sure that he didn't win. I don't even think Trump wanted to win. You know, he spent a tiny, tiny fraction of his own money. He spent less than an eighth of what he had spent in 2016 of his own money. He went along with the lockdown. He went along with the globalist purge. He spent virtually nothing to get reelected. He walked away with all the campaign contributions. Then he ran a massive fundraising thing with the Stop the Steal. Walked away with another $250 million. $250 million. The fine print on it was set up as a scam. Yeah, help us. We're going to fight this election. Yet the first $8,000 went directly to him and the RNC, splitting that. And then after you gave these grifting criminals more than $8,000, then it would go into a fund to do a legal challenge to the vote. And so for all those reasons, and because Trump did nothing to stop the lockdown, and because a lot of these people who are leading it, like Alex, did nothing really to stop the lockdown. They made excuses for what Trump was doing for the last year. And then they come out to say, well, we got to have him in office to keep this going. I didn't support January the 6th because of that, not because it was a protest. But I've said that I think the most effective way to protest this, again, if we have an organization, you get together, you have speeches, you talk about it from a political standpoint, but even more important is just to live your life. And if you have church where you get together with hundreds of people or thousands of people or tens of thousands of people on a regular basis, and that is the best way to protest this, the best way to protest this. Because then when these people come and they arrest the pastors, as they did in Canada, when they put a massive attack and wall off the church building so that nobody can go there to worship, it shows them to be the tyrants. That's the key. That's the key. People need to understand who the aggressors are in this, who the tyrants are in this. And so now we have an update. John MacArthur, who last July, his church, 7,000 to 8,000 people every week meeting in defiance of the Fauci superstitions. They cooperated at first. They thought, all right, we'll do what they say. We want to be responsible. We don't want anybody to get hurt. So they cooperated for a couple weeks, and then everybody began to realize, wait a minute. Nobody's getting sick. You know when people are getting sick. You know when people in your group, in your church, in your homeschooling group are getting sick. You know when there's a stomach virus going around. None of that was happening to anybody. I was like, this is looking really fishy. And then by July, they added the additional. They kept adding things on, even though nobody was seeing anything happening. And then when they had the prohibition, well, you can come to church, but you can only have a limited number of people. You got to wear masks. You got to keep apart. And you cannot sing. And that's all right. That's it. We're done. We're done. We're not playing this game anymore. And so L.A. accrued all these different fines against them. And now, as of yesterday, L.A. and the state of California have capitulated. And this church has won an $800,000 settlement from California and L.A. County, state of California and L.A. County. They've agreed to pay $400,000, both of these institutions, both the state of California agreed to pay $400,000 and Los Angeles County agreed to pay $400,000 for the harassment, for the violation of religious liberty for the last year. In July of 2020, John MacArthur wrote, in response to the recent state order requiring churches in California to limit or to suspend all meeting indefinitely, we, the pastors and elders of Grace Community Church, respectfully inform our civic leaders that they have exceeded their legitimate jurisdiction, and our faithfulness to Christ prohibits us from observing the restrictions that they want to impose on our corporate worship services. He added, the biblical order is clear. Christ is Lord over Caesar, not vice versa. Christ, not Caesar, is the head of the church. So they threatened the church with fines. They threatened him with jail time. At one point, L.A. County officials evicted the church from a parcel of land that it had leased for use as a parking lot. In a series of court cases brought before it by a number of churches, the county has already had to pay these other churches $2 million in legal costs because they won. A statement from county officials read, after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that some public health safety measures could not apply to houses of worship, resolving this litigation is a responsible and appropriate thing to do. But that happened months ago. These people wanted to hang in to the last bit. And I suspect that this timing has something to do with the re-election desires or the retention desires of Newsom, as he is now looking to not be thrown out in a recall election. I think it has something to do with that personally. So an $800,000 settlement, the Thomas More Society representing them had a statement said, we are very pleased to see Pastor John MacArthur and Grace Community Church's First Amendment protections fully vindicated in this case. It has been a hard-fought battle to preserve religious liberty, and we hope that the result will encourage Californians and all Americans to continue to stand firm that church is essential. As Alexis de Tocqueville so presciently warned, writes this site that covered it, standingforfreedom.com, they have a quote from Alexis de Tocqueville, who back in the 1830s came to America, and wrote at least my copy of it is two volumes, Democracy in America, talking about what life was like there. He said, tyranny may be able to do without faith, but freedom cannot do without faith. And I would just add, this is $800,000 in penalties, $400,000 from the state, $400,000 from L.A. County. So $800,000 they pay in penalties. They have to pay legal costs as well, I'm assuming. But I know that they had been putting massive fines for the last 13 months against that church. And those fines, because of the litigation, the fines had been held in escrow. So what's going to happen to that church is that they're going to get that escrow money back as well as the $800,000. They meant it for evil. God used it for good. That should be a lesson to all of us to stand for our principles, regardless of the cost. It isn't always going to work out to the extent that that we get monetary gain out of doing the right thing. That's usually not the case. That makes it all the more interesting in this particular case and all the more glorifying to God. But, we have to stand and do the right thing because ultimately, what God has in store for people who obey him is far more than $1 million payoff at the end of the year. That's chump change compared to what God is capable of giving us. And we look at all of this, and we look at all the massive amount of money. And I mentioned this earlier. Now we're hearing that Social Security Trust Fund is going to run out of money in 12 years, and we just don't know where we're going to get the money. I mean, you know, $6 trillion last year, another $6 trillion this year. Who cares, right? Oh, but we can't pay you back for the payments that you've made for all these years. Do you see how government betrays? I mean, this is why, as tragic as it is, I'm not surprised that government, you know, the military, the Pentagon, the Biden administration gave a stand-down order on stopping that suicide bomber. I'm not surprised that they abandoned the Americans and the Afghans who worked for them, or the American citizens, others who were there. Of course they're going to abandon us. They're going to abandon us on Social Security even. You know, they may wind up, even if they print the money to give us the Social Security, they will still probably wind up denying Social Security to people who do not take their demanded jabs and so forth. And look at the people who have bought into the green lie. Oh, the planet is going to be destroyed because of global warming and so forth. So you've got to go out and get an electric car. Oh, and it's got to be a battery-operated electric car. This is Eric Peters was saying, you know, the hybrid car that they did have, the Volt, where you had a motor that would kick on just to charge up the batteries and keep your range going forever. You know, it used the, you didn't have to cycle through the batteries as much, and you didn't have to do them with a fast charge. So it meant you had didn't have the risk of fires. You didn't have the fatigue on the battery. The small motor that was there had very, very low emissions, so it was better for the from the battery standpoint and usage, and it was better from the emission standpoint and usage, but no, that can't be. We're only going to have battery-operated electric cars. We can't have electric cars that run off of hydrogen. No, it has to be the battery. And we know why that is, because they want to have an excuse to tax people by the mile. Now drivers in the UK are, of course, now facing new taxes to make up the cost of the move to the electric car. And part of that is going to be the tax by the mile. They're going to get their money. They're going to get their pound of flesh. There is no free ride. There is no free lunch. They're just pushing this off on people. And then Matt Taibbi comes after NPR for trashing free speech. And we're just talking about that other part, another part of the, not the other part, but another part of the First Amendment, the free exercise of religion. But, of course, they don't want you exercising your free speech. They don't want you protesting any of these aspects. Matt Taibbi, who used to write for Rolling Stones, and he was an excellent reporter. He had a liberal view of politics, you know, from an economic standpoint and things like that. But he was always there in terms of civil liberties. And he had no problem whatsoever in calling out criminals in high places. And so as a result, he's no longer at Rolling Stone, because there's no place in corporate media anymore for reporters like Matt Taibbi, who are honest. He took NPR to task, and by the way, I think he is on Substack now, but he also has a site, TK News. He took NPR to task because he said they just released an episode by an NPR program called On the Media, and this whole thing was set up to trash the idea of free speech and how free speech is dangerous and how free speech can no longer be tolerated under the unique circumstances of this medical dictatorship that we have. He said the guests for NPR's just released On the Media episode about the dangers of free speech included Andrew Marantz, author of an article called Free Speech is Killing Us. and P.E. Moskowitz, author of The Case Against Free Speech. Susan Benesch, director of the Dangerous Speech Project. And a Berkeley professor. Remember when the Marxists wanted free speech at Berkeley until they got control and then they wanted to shut down free speech? This is a Berkeley professor, John Powell, whose contribution was to rip John Stuart Mill's defense of free speech that he wrote in On Liberty. He says, oh, that's wrong. Matt Taibbi says, that's about right for NPR, which for years now has regularly congratulated itself for being a beacon of diversity while expunging every conceivable alternative point of view. You understand, every person that they had there was against free speech. Now, NPR is not about diversity. this government propaganda organization. He said, the essence of the arguments made by all of NPR's guests is that the modern conception of speech rights is based upon John Stuart Mill's outdated conception of harm, which they summarize as saying, my freedom to swing my fist ends at the tip of your nose. Well, I guess my freedom ends at the tip of their needle that they stick into my body. But let me just say this. You know, he gets into the details of what John Stuart Mill had to say. And John Stuart Mill's essay. But free speech did not arise with John Stuart Mill. You know, we had even people who we would not agree with pretty much anything they did, Voltaire, and the quote that is attributed to him is not directly a quote from him. It is a summary of what he said in an essay after essay. The idea that I may disagree with I may despise everything that you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. So this is something that has a very long tradition. This is something that, you know, the respect for free speech and the importance of free speech predated Voltaire and the American Revolution. So this is not something that is dependent upon an essay by John Stuart Mill. They said, but their argument was, well, we know that somebody can be harmed by something other than by physical violence. And so therefore, if your speech is keeping people from getting a vaccine, and in my imagination, the vaccine is going to save my life, or it's going to prevent this pandemic or something, then you have to bow to my imagination, and you can't debate my imagination. This is one of the reasons why they've been preparing us for this through the LGBT, through the transgender stuff especially. If I imagine that I am a particular gender, regardless of how many dozens of genders that they can imagine, you're supposed to play along with the Mrs. Nesbitt Tea Party, if you remember that from Toy Story 2. So he said this was already an absurd, bizarre take. But what came next was worse. I was stunned by Morantz and Powell's take on Brandenburg versus Ohio, our current legal standard for speech, which prevents the government from intervening except in cases of incitement and imminent lawless action. And so in this particular case, they went back to the situation that happened a long time ago in Skokie, Illinois, where you had some neo-Nazis who wanted to march in that predominantly Jewish community. And the ACLU, run by predominantly Jewish people, came to the defense of the neo-Nazis, and they just broke their arms congratulating themselves about how open-minded they were to do that. And I remember this case very well because we would constantly contact them and say, you know, what you need to do is you need to protect the free speech of people in order to have ballot access or in order to have access to debates. That's being shut down all the time, even for people who jump through the extra hoops to get on the ballot. They didn't want to hear about that. The ACLU didn't want to hear from Libertarians or Green Party or independent candidates or any of these other parties saying, we should be included in the debates because we're on the ballot. We only have three candidates. You can run a debate with three candidates, can't you? Yeah, we've seen debates run with two dozen candidates, haven't we? And both in the last two presidential elections. But they would not do anything about that. They will always pick that type of case. Oh, look, you know, all of us here at the leadership of the ACLU, we're all Jewish, but we're going to lay down our preferences and support our enemies, the neo-Nazis, because we're so open-minded and because we care about principles so much. And Matt Taibbi points out, as Powell comes out, he says, well, the speech absolutists try to say, you can't regulate speech. Why? Well, because it would harm the speaker. It would somehow truncate their expression and their self-determination. And then you say, okay, well, what's the harm? Well, the harm is a psychological harm. Well, wait a minute. I thought you said psychological harm did not count. Matt Taibbi said this is nothing other than pure propaganda and spin. He said the whole point of that was not about psychological rights. It was about minority rights, supporting the rights of the individual to free speech, even if it is wrong. And even if you disagree with what we have to say about vaccines or about medicine, we have to have that right to disagree, or we no longer have any liberty, any freedom, and we don't have science or medicine either. That all gets jettisoned. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about this DNA. And we also have a couple of statements that I think you should hear. People talking about whether or not this mandate is the mark of the beast.
The common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
Those of the show. So I didn't have time to get into it, and except to just briefly mention it. And I wanted to get back to this. This was sent to me by a longtime supporter, Christina. Appreciate her sending this to me. Inovia, a year ago, got a $71 million contract from the U.S. Department of Defense to scale up manufacturing of a smart device and a DNA vaccine. That's right, DNA, not mRNA. Distinct from mRNA. No. This will modify your DNA. But, of course, you know, it's not going to, it's nothing to worry about. It's 100% safe, and it will not alter your body in any untoward way at all. It just alter your DNA, and it'll do it all precisely exactly as intended. Which, you know, even if that were true, I don't really have too much trust in their intentions anymore. And this money was put out last June 23rd, 2020, was when the article came out. And they were at that point in time preparing for their phase two tests, not even phase three. But they're ramping this up for manufacture. The money was to manufacture it. Again, doing the same thing that Trump did. This whole thing, Operation Warp Speed, has been a Department of Defense operation from the get-go. And if you know the history of the military with bioweapons, if you know the history of the military with Operation Paperclip and the Nazis and the Japanese war criminals that they brought in, all of this, from Operation Warp Speed to this, your spidey senses ought to be tingling here. This is something that is directed, is a novel way of putting it directly into the skin, they said. So this is different than injecting it into your muscle. But of course, as we've already seen with the mRNA, injecting these, the mRNA genetic coding, to make your body produce these protein spikes, that does not stay in your muscle. This is why, in so many different ways, this is so novel, so different, it's not even really a vaccine. You know, we've had issues and safety issues of vaccines. I've had issues with the fact that they have actually no product liability. So between the preservatives, between the adjuvants that they put in to provoke your immune system, and especially the fact that they have no legal liability. For all of those reasons, I am anti-vaxxer. As anti-vaxxer as you're going to find anybody, anywhere. I absolutely, categorically reject it until they stand by their product, until you can sue them for what they do recklessly. I will oppose all vaccines. especially this one, because this is not a vaccine. They're not giving you something that is dead or weakened. They're not giving you a dead or weakened pathogen that has been adulterated with adjuvants and preservatives. No, they're not even doing that. No, they're injecting a genetic code into your body to make you produce something that we know is a proven toxin, the protein spike. And that toxin does not remain in your muscle. You know, in the past, you could train the immune system by injecting a substance in the muscle, in theory. But this is not what this is. It's unleashing a genetic chain reaction. And this protein spike, as we've seen from studies coming from several different countries, Japan especially, we see the biodistribution of this is throughout the body, but that these protein spikes accumulate in a wide variety of critical organs and that they pass through the blood-brain barrier, that they have a tremendous effect on blood and on the circulatory system. But no worry, they're going to take it to the next step. They say this is not going to be like mRNA. The Department of Defense says that the DNA medicines go into the cell and modify your DNA. They said that they're Joint Services Lead is trying to develop, acquire, and field life cycle support of chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear defense equipment. Defense equipment? These are biological weapons, right? We talk about all of these different things. Chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear. These types of weapons of mass destruction are what they're focused on. And understand that this vaccine and these other programs that are coming out of the military are weapons of mass destruction, and they are offensive, not just defensive. They said the Sanovio vaccine, DNA vaccine, just put it on the skin and then it seeps into your body, is the only nucleic acid-based vaccine that is stable at room temperature for more than a year, does not require to be frozen in transport or storage. See, great. That's all they're worried about. They say that the Sanovio has 15 DNA medicine clinical programs currently in development a year ago. And so they're looking at this DNA medicine for a wide variety of conditions, for HPV, you know, human virus, the Pamplova virus that is we had for Gardasil and other things like that, the HPV vaccines, cancer, infectious diseases, and, of course, coronaviruses. They say that the way that this operates is that the device uses a brief electrical pulse to reversibly open small pores in the cell to allow plasmids to enter, overcoming a key limitation of other DNA, other nucleic acid approaches, such as mRNA. So they've told us, don't worry about the mRNA. Don't call it a genetic code injection. We're not modifying your DNA. And then we found out from Thomas Jefferson University they did a very simple, elegant experiment that's not been widely covered, of course, because in that experiment, the standard accepted consensus dogma is that mRNA cannot modify your DNA. It only copies it. Well, you know that if something is going to copy, there's always a possibility of it modifying it. Well, they said it even goes beyond that. The mRNA can modify your DNA. But they wanted to make that distinction. They wanted to tell people that the mRNA could not modify your DNA. And now they're telling you that this is going to modify your DNA. And it's better. It's better. By opening up the cells and allowing these plasmids to enter, it overcomes a key limitation of mRNA. Because evidently it allows them to do even more to modify your DNA. DNA plasmids enable the cell to produce the targeted antigen. The antigen is processed naturally in the cell and triggers the desired T-cell and antibody-mediated immune responses. Administration with the Selectra device, it's a registered trademark, is designed to ensure that the DNA medicine is efficiently delivered directly into the body's cells, where it can go to work to drive an immune response. Sanovio's DNA medicines do not interfere with or change in any way an individual's own DNA. I mean, can you seriously believe that? It's going to go in and it's going to modify the DNA and it's going to you know, hijack the DNA to produce whatever it produces. But it doesn't change you at all. Doesn't change you at all. What a bunch of nonsense. You know, all this stuff. They keep telling you the CRISPR-Cas9 technology. Oh, it's like a scalpel and yada, yada, yada. For years, there's been literature about the people who've used it in the cattle industry, for example, here in Texas. And as they've been using it even for a longer period of time, more extensively there, the CRISPR-Cas9 approach, they said it's not like a scalpel, it's more like a chainsaw, and it damages things in a lot of different places, and it has a lot of unintended cuts and modifications everywhere. So these people saying, well, we're going to go in and we're going to modify this with a brand new approach, and we got to get this out quickly because this has an advantage. It goes in and directly modifies your DNA, unlike the mRNA, or to a higher extent, and it doesn't need to be refrigerated. So, you know, we can pass this around and we can make more money off of this. Jim Quinn at the Burning Platform says a critically thinking person might look at the Delta data and conclude, yeah, what would we conclude? Well, just to review, he said, we've seen with India that they had a surge that was 70% lower than the U.S. peak in January, and then the cases completely collapsed by 75% in a matter of weeks. That was before there was any rollout of vaccines. This is back in January. They did distribute copious amounts of ivermectin. No, it must just be a coincidence. Everybody knows that ivermectin is only for cows and horses, just like the experts at the FDA told us. With the Indian case collapse, the purveyors of fear needed to give the Indian variant a new and scary name, the Delta variant. So India, with a 10% vaccination rate, has seen a complete collapse in cases. Meanwhile, the UK and Israel, and some of the highest vaccination rates in the world at 64% and 60% respectively, have seen huge surges in Delta cases. The U.S. surge began shortly after July 4th, with the mainstream media building the Delta fear narrative day after day. If you want more cases, just do more mass testing of people who are showing no signs of illness. So we're seeing a lot of different things happening here. We're seeing the testing driving statistics that are phony, people who are not sick, who don't have any viral load. But we've also seen in country after country, as that French epidemiologist explained, and I've reported it, the cases just collapse, as they talked about in India, without any vaccines, with the introduction of ivermectin. And then they stayed down low until they began the vaccines, and then it spiked up real quickly. And then we had the narrative created of the Delta variant, and breakthrough cases. I think it's simply just the vaccine. A critically thinking individual, he says, might look at the data and conclude that the vaccines are enhancing the virus and creating the variants, or it could just be the virus itself that we're seeing here. And just to repeat, you know, what we've seen over just the last week that Rand Paul talked about. He tweeted out the article. It was on FEE, Foundation for Economic Education. They talked about a Harvard scientist who went through and a very detailed study. And what we've seen with that, and what we've seen with studies that have come out of Israel as well, where they have a lot of experience, let me just summarize it. Three key data points. People who are vaccinated have 251 times the viral load of the unvaccinated. They have a 27 times higher risk of infection. And they found that natural immunity was 13 times stronger than the immunity that people got from the vaccine. So we now have, instead, a current all-hands-on-deck campaign to discredit ivermectin. And he said, this is really a sign of desperation. I think it is. You know, we've had two high-ranking vaccine officials at the FDA immediately resign, and they said in resigning, they're not happy about the fact that the Biden administration is now pushing this booster shot. I guess these people have had about enough. I mean, they've been pushed by Trump to give the emergency use authorization. They've been pushed by the Biden administration to do a full FDA authorization. And now they're being told you got to authorize a booster shot. And it's like, is that it? Are they trying to jump? Are these rats that are jumping ship because they see this massive wave of injured and murdered people coming? Or maybe they're just moving on to collect that golden parachute paycheck that people in this revolving door always seem to be able to cash in with. But I said I wanted to talk about the mark of the beast. This is an article from LifeSite News. It's a Catholic site. They talked to Bishop Snyder, but I think he had some interesting things to say in general about this, not theologically, but just in general. His name is Athanasius Snyder. This is a guy who grew up as a child in the Soviet Union, and so, like Alexander Solzhenitsyn, he knows what that looks like, having lived underneath it. He said, "I do not say that this is the direct mark of the beast, but it could already be in part a prefiguration of this sign." Now, let me just say this. If you know, and we all do know, that the government rolls out things and prepares people for them in stages, do you think maybe Satan does that? He's ultimately behind these governments. He's far more clever than any of these politicians or CIA operatives. Is this a preparation for it? Absolutely it is a preparation for it, I think. He said they're conditioning people to see the state as the owner of your body. You understand that, even if you're not a Christian, even if you're not religious in any way, shape, or form. You understand that the impetus of all this is to make the government the owner of your body. Nobody sees this more clearly than people who have lived under these types of systems in the Soviet Union and other communist countries. He said, if the government has absolute power to force you and to say how your body should be, then you've lost your last bit of privacy because your body does belong to you. And again, for all those liberals out there, well, what about abortion? No. Abortion, that's not your body. That's a different body. It's got a different DNA, by the way, among other things. He says, we have to think about what is coming. He said, conscientious objection against the use of abortion-tainted vaccines must go together with practical resistance. For instance, by creating networks that allow people to buy and sell or to travel without needing to obtain a sanitary pass, a vaccine passport. See, he's saying the same. Anybody who's paying attention to this, even if you don't have any spiritual discernment about this, you can see this is happening. This is why I'm saying we have to start creating our networks, our parallel society. We need to start thinking about how we're going to navigate through this. Hope we can stop it, but you need to prepare for the worst case, not the best case scenario. We have already now to seek all of the practical possibilities to avoid this new forced dictatorship over our body and our freedom. If we do not do this, there will be a totalitarianism that will be complete, and this will be the end of every human society. He said more than once, using the word slavery to describe the consequences. As they pointed out, he said, those who are not vaccinated are in fact becoming the kind of person who has almost no equal rights compared to others. This means that they will become a kind of slave. They will have no freedom. He said the government is, not in theory, but de facto, declaring that it is the government that will become the owner of your body. This is the ultimate expression of extreme communism, because communism aims to say that all belongs to the state, and such as the means of production and so on. Education, family, everything is common and controlled by the communists. He said we have to resist. We have to protest against the horrible phenomenon in our society, which is the so-called fetal industry. We must distinguish between two different industries that are intimately connected. And I want to say this to people who are out there trying to put together religious exemptions. And of course, you know, the religious exemptions in a lot of cases, this is just lip service because they're going to stand in judgment of your statements. But I think this is a very important term that he puts here. The distinction between the abortion industry, which is horrible, and the other industry, the fetal industry. And what he means by that is a trade in trafficked body parts, as Fauci and the NIH and the FDA have worked together with Planned Parenthood to do. The fetal industry. The use of tissues of aborted babies and the marketing of the body parts of aborted babies. So the vaccines which were produced by using these cell lines or tested on them are a de facto part of the fetal industry. So this person at LifeSite News questioning him says, I meet a lot of people now who for various reasons are absolutely opposed to the vaccine, but who risk losing their jobs, their families' livelihoods, if they do not take it. They say, my duties of state are to ensure the survival of my family, and I cannot do otherwise than to receive this vaccine, even if I am totally opposed to it. His reply is, he said, well, we understand that parents have to support their families and provide for their families, and this is a very difficult question. He said they should all do whatever is possible to avoid receiving a vaccine. Because you know what? If you get a vaccine and you have an adverse reaction to it or you die, you're not going to be able to support your family. But he goes on to say, they can make a conscientious objection. Perhaps they can even get a document from their doctor for a medical reason. But he said, I think God will reward these people with many spiritual gifts if they choose to live a poor life rather than to cooperate with the fetal industry. Surely they will not die from starvation. And I've said this myself. You know, go back and look at the Psalms. I was young, now I'm old. But I've never seen the godly forsaken or the children begging for bread. Do you believe that? Do you believe it enough to trust it? You know, when you look at one of my favorite stories is in terms of illustrating what you really trust. It's a true story. A guy who was a trapeze artist, you know, more than 100 years ago. He's at Niagara Falls. He's at the foot of the falls. But still, I mean, if you fall on the foot of the falls, you're gone. But he strung a rope across it, and he did a lot of tightrope exhibition for the people that were there. And again, it's the late 1800s, I believe. And then he pushes a wheelbarrow across, and he pushes a bunch of stuff in a wheelbarrow, goes back and forth across, and then he says, how many of you believe I could do a person, you know, going across this tightrope? And they all raise their hand. It says, who wants to be a volunteer? Nobody. There's a difference between a mental assent and trust. Do you understand that? Are you willing to put yourself in that wheelbarrow? So he says, they will not die of starvation. This was our experience in communist Soviet Union. My parents did not collaborate with the Communist Party. Therefore, my parents could not have a profession. This was not allowed. So they were simple workers. They had a very low salary, and we lived in a really simple way. But God did not abandon us. We were happy. We had our faith. And it gave us riches for all of our life. Even when the others who had accepted the conditions of the Communist Party, even though they had better living conditions than we did, we were happier. And of course, we understand that all of this is temporary. Right? If you look at the rich people, if you look at the people who are... You look at Bill Gates. Do you envy Bill Gates? You should feel sorry for Bill Gates. You should pray for Bill Gates, but you should feel sorry for him. As C.S. Lewis said, there are no mere mortals. He said, some of us will... It just depends on what's going to happen. Some people will become something so amazing that you'll be tempted to worship it. Others will become something so horrible you could not stand to look at it. This is a difference. There are two different races of people. The difference is which destiny they're racing to. So he says, maybe we can say that this is a kind of prefiguration of the mark of the beast. Maybe I would say, not say myself directly that this is already the mark of the beast, but it does have a lot of these elements to condition us to this. He said, it's very close when people are not marked in their body with the vaccine. This is a mark. Cannot enter certain shops or supermarkets. They cannot enter. They cannot buy there. They cannot sell there. And this is literally being carried out. And so we have to be prepared to be excluded. And so when we look at where this is happening, we look at the de facto compulsory vaccine. As he points out, it is an abuse of power by the government. And that in and of itself is immoral. This is why I say there's so many different aspects to this. The medical harm issues, whether or not the government is going to be allowed to restructure society into a dictatorship. Now, that is a great evil, and we must oppose that evil. He said, I would compare the situation with the immoral laws when some totalitarian governments issued immoral orders against the Jews. And so they talked about, again, this is now when they start to get into fake documents. Interestingly enough, he makes all the same arguments because it is the same argument. You know, whether it's Doug Wilson or whether it's a Catholic bishop or whether we understand that bearing false witness is different from doing things to protect innocent life. That's it for the broadcast today. Thank you for listening. Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.